Good afternoon. You are in the Senate Education and Workforce Committee. If you didn't want to be here, now's your time to exit and find the right airplane. I'm Vicki Walker, State Senator from Eugene, Chair of this committee, and we have a full agenda today. Glad to see so many of you in the room about such a interesting topic. Let me explain how we're going to do this today. We're going to have a very brief presentation from Senator Ringo on Senate Bill 415. That'll last just a couple minutes. Then we're going to hear from the governor's office and the ESD folks about their ideas about consolidation and lack consolidation or whatever it is they've been working on. They'll share that with us. Then Senator Ringo will come back with a group of folks. And so I anticipate each of you will have an hour. And then from 5 to 6, we will have public testimony. And I did that for two reasons. One, there's quite a few people in the public who want to testify, and 5 to 6 o'clock hour gives them an opportunity to do that. So I hope my committee can hang with me until 6. I know you all have other obligations. We put you on notice that we would stay till 6, but I understand if you need to leave, I will remain here, however, until the end. We will not go past 6. I can't handle more than three hours, and we may take a short break in the middle, but we'll see. Okay, with that, I would like to hear from Senator Ringo. If you could come forward, identify yourself, and give us just a little bit of history on this bill that we're looking at. Let me open a public hearing on Senate Bill 415.
Thank you very much, Senator Walker, members of the committee. I'm Charlie Ringo, a state senator from District 17. I'm thinking that if we all talk real fast, we can get done by 5. So that's going to be my plan. I wasn't going to start with an overview of my Senate Bill 415, but I really just want to talk very briefly about why I feel so strongly about reforming education service districts. The governor's proposed school budget is $5 billion, which is $360 million short of where we need to be just to stay even with last biennium. And so unless we find some way to take care of that, we're going to be looking at severe school cuts all over the state. Or, at the same time, we can be looking at using our school dollars as efficiently as possible. I think when you look at the education service districts and how they're structured, you realize that they get 5% of our state school fund. That's $250 million. That's a lot of money. And I think that there's a number of structural problems with the way that they're set up. And that's what I want to urge this committee is, let's take a look at the structural problems that have to do with governance, they have to do with oversight, they have to do with just the mere structure of having 20 ESDs in our state. That's where I hope this conversation goes. And I just want to leave you with two main points, and then I'll go sit down and listen to the results of the task force. First of all, this is important. This is the K-12 budget. There's no more important issue facing our state right now is how to educate our kids. And $250 million is a huge amount of money, and we can't afford to let that money be used in any way other than as efficient as possible. The second point I want to make is that we have had an endless parade of task forces over what to do with ESDs. And I pulled out something. I've got a set of notebooks that I have at home. There was a task force in 1992, task force in 1999, task force in 2002, legislative special education task force. That was also 2002. So these have been studied to death, but they've always been studied by the same people that are part of the ESD structure. And I don't think they've brought fresh perspective to what ESDs are all about and how they ought to function. So the two things I would urge you is, number one, let's do something significant with ESDs this legislative session. Doesn't have to be my bill, could be somebody else's idea, but it's got to be something significant. And number two, let's do it this session instead of just setting up another task force. Thanks very much, and I'll look forward to more detail later.
Senator Ringo, you are owning up to Senate Bill 415 as being a bill that you brought to the committee.
My fingerprints are all over it.
All right. When members ask if they could have a bill introduced as a committee bill, I keep that confidential unless the member chooses to say so otherwise. And so now we know.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
I look forward to the hearing.
All right. So we will hear now about the governor's task force that has been involved in ESDs. And I should also say that we are going, this committee is going to Douglas County on Friday to continue our ESD discussion at the Douglas County ESD Service District. Correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And, you know, before I have the governor's task force come up, our committee administrator should probably tell us a little bit about Senate Bill 415, don't you think?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I could certainly explain that, or we could talk about it when we're actually taking testimony.
That would be good.
Okay.
Thank you. We haven't had a chance to talk today because I was out all morning. All right, then I'll hear from Mr. Sager and Ms. Fleming, if you'll come forward and identify yourself, and we'll get started.
Thank you, Chair Walker. For the record, I'm James Sager from the Governor's Office, and if I could for a moment, I'll just lay out kind of the procession we'll have coming up here. In a moment, I'll ask Vicki Fleming from the Department of Education to give some background about the connection with ESDs and how the department sees their purpose. Then I'll share with you some of the governor's thinking and kind of how we evolved to today. And then following us, Ozzie Rose and some of the superintendents will come forward and actually walk you through the plan that they are bringing forward at the governor's request today. So with that kind of layout, I'll ask Vicki to share a few thoughts.
Okay.
Good afternoon. For the record, Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent, Oregon Department of Education. With the indulgence of the chair, I want to go back over a few of the things that you heard already from us this week in our Ways and Means hearing when we began to talk about the agency budget and, in fact, the state school fund. The department has been undergoing a reorganization over the past several months, and a large part of that reorganization was predicated on the idea that we have the ability to work in a regional service delivery system that actually does operate in a more efficient and effective manner in the future. We talked in our Ways and Means hearings about an enterprise approach, which is very much what we're thinking about at the department. That meaning that we can't just think about K-12 education without thinking about the early childhood system, without thinking about the community college system, university system, and all of the agencies that represent support for children in communities. And a big part of that over the course of our conversations with education service districts is about how do we get to a system, a true regional delivery system. The agency, the Department of Education, we talk about separating steering from rowing, and very quickly what that means to us is the steering function of the state agency ought to be about policy development and about regulation of the money and the mandates and managing well. And we know that No Child Left Behind has forced us to do much in the area of data collection and data analysis. We want to separate that steering function from the rowing function, which is really service delivery and compliance in the 198 school districts and 20 ESDs that we currently have. So what is it that we need to do to be different as an agency, and what is it that we need to do in transacting with our partners to get services out to kids and, in fact, to make sure that school districts understand the mandates that they're operating under and can implement those with some assistance. You know that the past couple of years have brought us the most aggressive federal intervention in public education that we have seen, probably in my professional career, at the very least. At the same time, we have suffered under this scenario of continually cutting our budgets. So that, again, has forced us at the department to look very differently at what we do and how we do it. That means that the department is not able to provide and support a lot of the school improvement and technical assistance and professional development activities that we have done in the past, but rather we've had to turn our attention to a greater rigor around data collection, data analysis, reporting, guidance around implementing the law, and responding to a variety of other issues that No Child Left Behind has really created for us.
Could you hold that thought for a moment, Ms. Fleming? Doesn't the federal government give you money to perform those functions?
Senator Walker, absolutely. The government gives us money to do that. The federal government gives us money to do that. I believe a good contextual example of why it's different for the State Department to operate differently right now is the assessment system and the formula that is created around making a determination for districts either making adequate yearly progress or not. I think I gave this example this week in Ways and Means that with the last round of making that determination, there are over 50 million data points that we collect on individual students about how they're doing and in what aspect of the formula, everything from how many students participated in the tests to what race and ethnicity, what those variables meant in terms of calculating the school's overall determination. So we have gained additional resources, and we have gained additional workload. I think we estimate internally in our program areas a 25% to 30% increase in the workload as a result of the implementation of No Child Left Behind. The third thing that we've had occasion to discuss internally at the department, and I know is on the minds of the legislature, is performance management and what are the performance expectations and how do we manage for those performance expectations in school districts. And No Child Left Behind has a very clear target that by 2014, 100% of the kids in Oregon will be meeting standards. That's a pretty high expectation for us to try to shoot for. So all that said, we have looked to a new partnership with the system of education service districts that is more standardized, more disciplined, helps us look at administrative processes and the things that need to happen in the system, albeit when you don't have new capacity, you have to use your existing capacity differently. And so the relationship that we have tried to establish in the Castillo administration is about that. We've taken several actions along those lines. One is to work with the Association of Education Service Districts to formulate a memorandum of understanding, which you have included in the packet with the map of the current look at the 20 ESDs. It's included in your packet, as is the page in the statute that refers to ESD resolution services. We have revised and updated our procurement practices at the department to be able to and worked and relied upon advice and consultation from the ESD system to help us with that process. We have over $170 million worth of direct service delivery contracts that go through that system, which are entirely critical in terms of services to early intervention, early childhood, special education, regional programs, youth corrections education, and a variety of other things. And then there's also the question of equity of services and assistance to schools statewide around school improvement activities. And last summer we did a pilot project with ESDs to take existing strategies that they engaged in with school districts that help schools, in fact, get better at what they do. And I know from conversations with several ESD superintendents that districts are now beginning to ask for more of those kinds of services rather than less. So that said, the proposal that's being brought forward to you today from the Oregon Association of Education Service Districts is very much in alignment, and in fact we have participated in the creation of that with the ESD superintendents, and look forward to your reaction and working to refine and create a true regional delivery system with you and them.
Ms. Fleming, I have a couple of questions. The memorandum of understanding on the third page, it says the two last paragraphs, the specific details of decision-making, membership, charge, logistics, and other such items is outlined in the council charter to be developed, which is in parentheses. So first question is, has that been developed? And then the second question is, under signatories, representative from each ESD and from ODE will sign the final document. That second question is, has everyone signed it?
We have all ESDs have signed that with the exception of two, and those, in fact, are included in your Ways and Means notebook, every one of those that we have received to date that has been signed by the local ESD boards.
So the follow-up question to that, if there are two ESDs that have not signed this memorandum of understanding, what does that mean? Are they not participating in this?
It means that their boards are still considering the proposal and have yet to actually sign on the dotted line, and we anticipate that those will come forward.
Okay. And then can you speak to the charter to be developed? Where is that?
in the process.
Senator Walker, I cannot speak to the charter. I'm sure that references something related to the OAESD bylaws, and I would defer to my colleagues from OAESD to speak to exactly what that mechanism is.
Okay. The committee have any questions, Senator?
Yeah, no, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering. You mentioned that there, that the amount of data required to be collected because of No Child Left Behind is up 25%. What percent of the data you're collecting has nothing to do with federal regulations?
Senator Walker, Senator Cruz. All of the data that we would be collecting would be collected as a result of the requirements under No Child Left Behind.
Do you have a follow-up?
I guess I'm confused. I mean, No Child Left Behind, a lot of that legislation was not new at the federal level. What was new is the accountability section of it. And since there's all this accountability, I guess I was assuming that the department was collecting data for reasons that weren't necessarily tied to federal requirements, and so that's what I was trying to see if there was. I mean, you increase by this much. Is there other things that are similar enough that could go away to make it balanced? And,
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, we do have state mandates that we're responsible for carrying out, as well as the federal mandates. We collect an enormous amount of information for a variety of different things, most of which have been mandated or sent to us for implementation. So I'd be happy to get you. We have been asked to provide that information to the Ways and Means Committee. All of the surveys that we asked districts to complete around school finance and a variety of reports around federal and state mandates, I'd be happy to provide that for you.
Yeah, just a follow-up, Madam Chair. I think that may end up being a critical thing. I mean, we have over the years mandated some things of schools that may or may not any longer make sense or may be somewhat duplicative in a different way from, I mean, you know, this is the first time the feds have really come in and said, show us the money, more or less. And so this might be in Ways and Means of probably doing that, but it'd be interesting to see that information.
I think you're right, Senator Cruz, and Ms. Fleming has indicated she'll be providing that to our Ways and Means Committee, and we can make sure that this committee gets copies of it as well.
Thank you.
Senator Morsett.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. You mentioned the federal requirements, state requirements. What about the local district requirements? The school districts within the ESD must have some request of the ESD, so the data gathered is more than just state and federal. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the resolution process between local school districts and education service districts is a request for services. I'm not really sure I understand your question about data. Help me out here.
Well, it just seems to me that there would always be questions about procedures and best practices and so on that might go to the ESD for compilation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, absolutely. And I think in this newly preferred system that we're talking about, if there is a need for assistance with math instruction or support for second language learners in a school district, we believe that ESDs would be the place where that assistance could and should happen more logically than from the State Department of Education. The interventions that No Child Left Behind requires of us are stated in the law as a system of support for school improvement. I think because of the way the current system works, we couldn't really say with any degree of confidence that it looks the same in every part of Oregon. And the standardizing and the work to actually define a core set of services, which is what the proposal that you will hear really does, gives us the opportunity at the state level to say, yes, we know if we go to an ESD, we can get that in all of the context that it exists, rather than having one county not be able to do something and another county being able to do it. So the support for school improvement part and the technical assistance, professional development, data collection, help with communicating the law and guidance in the law are all the things that we're talking about. We would really appreciate being able to have that system provide for us. And, in fact, they do in many instances already.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Did you have anything you wanted to continue, Mr. Sager?
Sure. I was just going to lay out, again, for the record, James Sager, Governor's Office. I just wanted to lay out for you the governor's thinking around this. You'll hear repeatedly during this session coming from all sectors of education that we're talking about an education enterprise. The governor has really been emphasizing us looking at the system of education, not different sectors, and trying to have, in essence, sectors compete against each other. So his focus on efficiencies has not been from the standpoint of saying, gosh, we can free up dollars to use elsewhere in the budget, but to really make sure that every dollar we use in the education system, or every dollar possible, goes to services for students. And that has been a real focus. We have made it clear, the governor has made it clear, that inside the current revenue structure, the $12 billion we have for the coming biennium, that we don't have an adequate budget for K-12 or community colleges or the OUS system. And so inside that environment, we need to make sure that we're looking for those kinds of efficiencies focused on students. So he has put together a package of ideas as they relate specifically to K-12. We have the statewide data system, which is actually a K-20 idea. The education service district's regional delivery system that we've been working very closely with the department on defining. Consolidation of central office business functions. All of those things focus on getting dollars, making dollars available in local school districts for direct service to students. We appreciate Senator Ringo and others really helping to also drive this issue, because I think that we all have the same goal in mind, and that is the success of our students, and it's just a matter of how we make sure we get there. The plan that's going to be discussed in a few minutes comes forth at the request of the governor, because rather than creating a task force, which Senator Ringel aptly pointed out we've had several over the years, the governor felt it was time that we should just call on the people that are involved with it to say, come forward with a plan, an action plan that we can use right away to identify the scope of your purpose, what you're going to provide to students, and also help us come up with a logical way of approaching the issue of how many ESDs are appropriate in order to guarantee that we have the services that students need where it's needed. And so it's inside that structure that the governor really appreciates the fact that the superintendents have worked at crafting this idea that Ozzie and others will be bringing forward to you, and hopefully we can all work on to make sure that, in fact, we have the most efficient and effective system that current revenues will allow us to provide.
Mr. Sager, would you agree that when you make the statement that the governor wants to make sure every dollar goes to services for students, you would probably agree, wouldn't you, that spending money on airplanes, excessive travel, Las Vegas parties, buying cars for ESD personnel are probably not dollars that are going to students? Would you agree with that?
Madam Chair, I think we would agree that many of those items that you just suggested would be coming under question as to whether or not they provide direct service to students, yes.
All right, thank you. Well, we will have some further discussion about that from the folks to follow.
Sure.
All right, I'll ask you.
Senator Walker, I just wanted to mention one more thing, and that is I believe that electronically at least, and I have one hard copy version that you've been sent, to the committee administrator has been sent an Excel spreadsheet, which is the cumulative listing of all of the contracts for direct services that we currently have with the education service districts. You can see the scope and of that.
Okay.
I'll leave it with.
All right. Mr. Sager, Senator Deckard has a question. I understand we got that this afternoon, Ms. Fleming, but not in time to get it to the committee. Right? Okay, thank you. Senator Deckard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Sager, just a couple of questions. One is, does, and this may be premature, does the governor have any bottom lines in terms of this whole, we're like on day one of probably a month-long ESD discussion? Do you have a bottom line, or does the governor's office have a bottom line of an ESDA bill must look like X.
Madam Chair, Senator Deckard, no, we don't have a bottom line. We appreciate the work that the superintendents have done to give us a framework to have a what we hope would be, you know, a constructive conversation around that.
Mm-hmm. The other question I had, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the we're just kind of keeping our oars in the water and thinking through with the legislature on this. The other thing for me, and perhaps this is going to come in the testimony, but I think it'd be valuable to hear from the department or the governor's office or both, is for me it's the fundamental question of what services are the ESDs providing that otherwise in a redesigned system, or perhaps it's just a fee for delivery where you take that 5% and you just give it to the school districts and you allow ESDs and private contractors to compete for those dollars. Why would at least a cleaner, and it syncs well with the way we're doing our budgeting going forward, and the governor has proposed in terms of budgeting, that syncs well with just moving towards giving the money to the school districts and allowing them a more competitive model with the ESDs. I know that might not come out of a task force that is comprised of education service district individuals, but would be interested to hear. You and the department have much more experience kind of navigating these waters.
Madam Chair, Senator Deckard, let me address this first. I think it's important that we, for the governor, it has been important to look at the services we provide students. And so it's not a matter of services we provide what school districts, but to make sure that every student has the opportunity, the educational opportunity that they need to have the services provided. And so while some people have suggested that the ESD system, for instance, is an equalization, part of the equalization package, it is from the standpoint of making sure that those services are provided to students. School districts have a great deal on their plate. They're doing a wonderful job. But the difference between the kinds of services that a cooperative can make sure that every child has access to versus 198 individual school districts, we think it's important to have this regional system in place to provide that equity of access for all students. And so we think that this is an important piece of the system. Along that same line, you've heard the governor repeatedly talk about the whole governance structure in the state. And this is, we believe, a major step towards bringing some, again, rational connections between maintaining local control and yet at the same time having a state system that guarantees access to the children.
So Madam Chair, why don't we just go to, I'm trying to glean from that answer, why we don't just move to more of a fee-for-service type arrangement. I've at least searched for what's the rationale against that and allowing ESDs in a consolidated form to bid for services with the school districts, hopefully with the consolidation form that you guys have designed. But to me, I've yet to hear a really good argument of why we wouldn't go that direction. And perhaps Ozzy and his team are going to delve into that. But
Senator Walker, Senator Deckard, I'd like to just back up to the last question before talking about how the funding and the fiscal flow works. If you look at the list that I believe Senator Walker has before her now, the kinds of contracts that we rely on ESDs to provide, those are very specialized services to very high needs young people in our system. I, having had the experience of serving many of those special needs kids in my career, know that those are not services that you can just put out to bid and hope that every biennium, at least, that we get the right kinds of folks stepping forward to be able to do that. It is an area of expertise that has evolved over time, and those are largely connected. Many ESDs do a very good job of connecting community resources, such as connecting with the human services system and community-based organizations. The long-term care and treatment and hospital programs are very localized, and it requires over time the ability to develop a relationship, both a working relationship and a quality relationship. In addition to that, I think back to the former conversation about standardizing a system, it's very impossible, if you will, for us to rely on a regional service delivery system that we effectively have no control over other than letting money go out the door. And I think the trend that I'm hearing, at least since the beginning of this session, is that you expect more accountability and better performance rather than less accountability. And the way that we can do that as a state agency is to manage in a regional system where we know that our procurement practices are standardized, that we can rely on some degree of timeliness and discipline in our management processes so that we can work better with even 20 or 10 contracting entities than we would be able to if we had 50 school districts getting on the same set of services. So just from an economy of scale and efficiency of management perspective, I believe that this is a system that makes sense, albeit maybe not perfect, and if we're going to really reinvent it, you don't get rid of the layer of middle management completely because it requires contract management, grants management, program management at a regional level to be able to get these services done and in fact gain some efficiencies in the system.
All right. Thank you both. You'll step back, and I'll bring forward Mr. Ozzie Rose. And Mr. Rose, do you want to come up by yourself and then bring up folks later, or how do you want to do it?
Well, there's four of them, so I'll do it and I'll get out of the way and they can answer your question.
Okay. Then that sounds great. If you'd identify yourself for the record and who you represent, please.
For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I reside at 1323 Jordan Drive South in Salem, and I'm working for the Oregon Association of ESDs. I left this operation, was gone for a year, and came back and got in the middle of everybody trying to draw maps. Mm. And we think there's a better way to approach this than draw maps. First of all, to pick up where Senator Ringo left off, there have been 9 studies of ESDs since 1965. 4 of them recommended a reduction in the number. And by the way, in 65, there were 29 of them. 4 of them recommended to the legislature that we reduce the number. One time, the legislature referred that issue to the voters, and it was defeated. Twice, you let it die in committee. And once, you took action that resulted in the current reduction. Early 90s, mid-90s, we reduced from 29 to 21, and then since then, there was one voluntary merger to get down to 20. So it's not an issue that's brand new to the legislative process. The most comprehensive in terms of content and recommendations of these studies was in 1999, a legislative task force. And by the way, what we've done is keep referring to a task force. That was a committee appointed by the OASD leadership, and they called themselves a task force. This isn't a task force created by somebody. It was a committee sent off to try to address this issue. But in 1999, the legislature created a legislative task force, and the membership, 6 local districts, 6 ESDs, and 5 legislators. That group worked an interim and came up with 27 recommendations. 25 of them were presented unanimously to the legislature. 2 weren't unanimous. And guess what the topic was? Reduction in number of ESDs. That committee recommended that we reduce the 21 to 14, and the vote was 11 to 4. A second recommendation related to that was to allow any affected ESD to submit an alternative plan to the proposed merger, and that passed on a 13 to 1 vote. The 2001 legislature did adopt most of the funding recommendations from that group, and that's where we got the 95-5 split. It's where we got the 90-10 split of the money the BSDs have, and the resolutions process controlled a 90% and a 4-year phase-in. And all of that evolved around the effort to complete the equity mission that we started on in school districts back in the early 90s, where we're funding on $1 per student, and we equalized that for local districts, but we still had great inequities in terms of dollars per student within ESDs, or between ESDs. And so all those things were done to create equity of all the dollars going out to schools and ESDs. I only share this history to emphasize that the number of ESDs is not a new issue, nor is it an easy issue to resolve. And I shared the vote issue, and the number of those recommendations are unanimous to try to emphasize why it's difficult. If they're drawing maps and voting, and you're the one that's the votee,
you have a different view of what they're doing. And that's why the legislature had trouble with previous recommendations. There were some of those recommendations that came literally that had a lot of support from the field. But once they get here, and individuals from constituents start talking about what it does to our area, and your colleague, your colleagues now because you're all too young, but in terms of service at least, and those folks that were ahead of you couldn't deal with those. But where does that leave us today? We have increased demands and intrusion in the operation of local schools by state and federal government. We have moved from a locally funded school system to a state-funded system, increasing your interest and the interest of other state decision-makers on what happens in the operation of schools. We've decreased the capacity of the Oregon Department of Education to perform traditional tasks of training, curriculum support, school improvement, and technical assistance, and ask it to focus on regulatory and accountability issues. We have an increasing role of technology across the education system that is creating new opportunities for efficiencies on a regional basis. Obviously, the online schooling, the ability to start doing business practices differently than we've done in the past. The computer opens up a lot of stuff if you have the regional structure and the interest in taking them on. And we have now and will continue to have a shortfall in terms of the resources and in terms of demand for service. I do not buy the argument that we're going to grow, our economy is going to grow us out of our problems in Oregon. I believe that, by the way, I'm also working in the health area this year, and I spent all morning with some folks working on some health budgets. I finally said, why don't you go get it from education? But the demands of and the future of our demographics in the health area, education area, and corrections, we are not going to significantly turn around the problems you're facing in building a budget. It might be better in 07, but it's not going to be significantly different, I don't think, in the foreseeable future. So, what do we do about this? The question then before us, can we strengthen the role of ESDs play in supporting local districts in their task of serving all children? Can we create efficiencies? What should the ESDs or the concept of regional services for the future look like? And we need to, and our own people need to quit looking back and saying, here's the way we do it. What should we be doing in the year 2015 and 2020? This is the way we ought to be looking at this question. Some believe the issue, though, is just how many ESDs, and proponents of reducing the number of ESDs contend that fewer ESDs means reduced cost and more services to kids. They use words like significant reduction in cost with very little real analysis of what does that mean, significant reduction. You're not going to know very precisely about reduction in cost until you get down and start talking about mergers. This merger will do what to how money is spent? And I think you're aware of what mergers mean in the corporate world. The place you save in mergers, and there'll be no difference, but the real place you save money in mergers is reduced personnel cost. You get rid of people. I mean, the big-time stock market people that talk about these big mergers and that a company's worth more, it's worth more on a stock basis because they got rid of 15,000 employees. Mergers, and it's especially true in our business because we are a labor-intensive business. Schooling, people do schooling. So the merger issue, there is money to be saved, but the only real money is in personnel. Now, when you start reducing personnel, how do you do that? The opponents to the merger discussions and reductionists contend that savings will be minimal and maybe non-existent, and that the consolidation won't serve children well and aren't justified to have this discussion. The fact is, there should be some cost savings through consolidation or mergers, and there should be improved services. The precise savings and improved services won't be known until you start looking at specific actions. Having said that, such savings and service improvements are not likely to materialize unless some thought is given to the mission of ESDs. Start thinking about what are we going to ask regional agencies to do, and what are we going to, how are we going to benefit from those kinds of activities? It is that contention or premise that led our association to attack the consolidation merger question by first asking, What should an ESD be expected to do in today's world and the future to help districts make every child successful? And second, by asking, what are the criteria that define an ESD that could do those things? Not just, well, this is a better looking map and there's only X of them instead of Y, so we're better off. By the way, our committee that decided to move ahead on this adopted a set of criteria and adopted a set of core services by a 12-4 vote. It's not unanimous. And you'll probably hear from folks who don't think such a move is a good idea for all the reasons that they have. Now, I believe you should have in front of you a document that says Oregon Association of ESDs, our regional service delivery model. And the last item in that page or that section of stuff is the recommended criteria for restructuring the ESDs. And I'll just say a couple, three things about this, and then we'll let the superintendents talk to you because they know what they're talking about. This document, the first one, a group of 11 or 12 people spent a number of long days working on what should we expect from a regional agency that contributes to more efficiently and effectively delivering service to kids and still allows for local districts to determine what they get out of these kinds of support. And they came up with four areas of core services. Programs for children with special needs. By the way, Senator Decker, Madam Chair, Senator Decker, your issue about contracting out or putting everybody on a fee, one of the issues we would have to address in that is the maintenance of effort issue required by the feds. An awful lot of our districts would have a great deal of trouble with a maintenance effort question in this area if they went back to that model, and we'd have to look into that carefully. Mm-hmm. Technology support for school districts, school improvement services for school districts, and this is the area where I think the State Department is most concerned about. They can't do things anymore with their capacity. How do they carry out the mission you give them through statutes in this arena? And they would use the ESDs for this delivery service. And then administrative and program support. And it is in this area that people talk about, at least the governor does in his public statements, about business practices being moved, centralizing business practices. And that probably has merit and ought to be looked at. I've challenged the ESD soups to go back to meet with their local soups to start talking about how can we do business differently than we've been doing it in terms of centralizing some of the things you do in local districts. Now, some districts would say, I can do all this myself. I don't want to do that. Well, you may not want to do that, but can we do it better in a centralized? And I don't believe that you're going to turn all the business offices from the districts into the ESD. There are, in a superintendent alive that's going to not want some handle on his business operations. But it may be that you can take business functions, such as accounts payable or payroll or accounts receivable or something else, and centralize those and get some savings. I don't think you won't get a lot of savings, but if you save one school teacher position, that's one more classroom. So it is worth looking at, and we have an obligation to look at those things. That would fall under that general area. But another thing I'd draw your attention to, and this it's a little different than things that are going on. As we talked about this, there's a section called implementation. I'm sorry, the pages aren't numbered. It's the next to last page. And it talks about each ESD being required to develop with their districts a regional master plan for services. And the districts control that master plan. Here are the core services that we need to work on for you and develop a plan for doing that and annually have the districts update that master plan. Give more specificity, more direction, and more accountability for what they do for the districts. Then the last page is, okay, we think you ought to be able to provide these services. What kind of an ESD would it take to do that? It's going to have a minimum infrastructure of some kind. It's going to be able to serve a certain geographic area or whatever. And again, a group of 10 folks, and this was adopted 9-1, by the way. Wasn't unanimous. But after two long days of arguing and discussion, the criteria, geography, a minimum maximum number of districts, a staffing model that allows you to do your job, a minimum number of students, and minimum number of students is primarily drive a base budget that will give you the infrastructure you need, and then having at least one public institution within the region. One of the comments on there that you may ask about, east of Cascades means all counties east of Crest except, or excuse me, including Klamath County. Not including Klamath. We do know that Klamath County is east of Cascades. I want to be sure you know that. But they're already in an ESD that starts on the west side, so that's why that little reference. I've been taking a task over that. If you follow this criteria, you'd probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 15 ESDs instead of the 20 that exist. Now, the reason I say there's a range is that these criteria are quasi-objective. You can quantify these and make some judgments. But in making the judgments, you're going to apply some subjectivity and some political judgments. For example, the Wallawa ESD superintendent believes that the best situation for his kids would be just the Wallawa and Union ESD to be in the ESD. And that may or may not be true. That's his belief. That particular set doesn't get you the student base that we talk about, but it does answer the geography question. They're connected. They're both up near the northeast corner, et cetera, et cetera. Another one that, when you applied this criteria, raised a question, Douglas and Coos Curry, neither one of them have the student base that we say they should have. But geography, if you connect them, then they're L-shaped, creates travel time issues and so forth. What's the trade-off? And some people need to start walking that through and deciding which is more important in this case. And that's what how criteria are used. I just want to be sure that you understand what we mean. But these are the criteria you ought to think about when you make these discussions. Now, the next question that the chair in a meeting tonight looked at me and says, where's the substance? I thought there was quite a bit of substance here because I was involved in the discussion led to it. And I asked her what she meant by saying, where's the bill? I think what that really means is, where's the map? What is your recommendation what we ought to do? Who's going to make this decision? In the end, you're going to make the decision if there's a new map. We may have to help you or others help you decide on how the map ought to look. But in the end, that will probably fall to your, and it'll be difficult, but we're willing to try to help you with that. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll be quiet and answer questions or bring the soups up and they can answer questions.
Mr. Rose, I have a couple of questions, and I do want to indicate that because Senator Ringo took the first 5 minutes, we are going to 4:05 with your presentation, but we will stop with your presentation at that time and proceed. And your folks can wait around and come back, but we need to proceed the way that we have scheduled because people have arranged their times. So let me ask you two questions. You indicate there on this last page that there were 10 ESDs represented, that nine of them agreed to this and one did not. What about the other 10 ESDs? Because there are 20.
Madam Chair, and members of the committee. This was a committee appointed by the executive committee, mm-hmm. and the committee submitted its report, which was adopted by the elected executive committee. So it was a work group appointed by the executive committee, which brought back the recommendation. Like in this committee, you appoint a work group, they bring it back to mm-hmm. you for action. And the group that finally approved this was the executive committee, so it was approved by the association. I only shared the votes individually. I'm trying to be sure everybody understands how difficult these issues are. I think you already know that, but I want to try to keep that on the table for everybody. By the way, the gentleman who voted against it in the work group, he's in an ESD that has the million-dollar base, and he has a few number of kids. And he said, show me that my kids don't lose resources out of this, and then I'll talk different maybe to you. But everybody pays attention to their own kids and the kids they serve.
And Mr. Rose, I have several questions about ESD operations. I'm not sure you're the one to answer them. If you're not, maybe I should address them to the superintendents.
I think you should address them. I have answers for a lot of things, but you probably need their answers.
All right, then I will wait. Does the committee have any questions of Mr. Rose before we ask him to step down? Senator Deckert?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question. Ozzy, I think you're the right one because you've worked a long time in the legislature, and you know, you mentioned parochial issues, which you would be shocked if I told you they also reside on this side of this barrier here. But when we're at our best, we're able to set aside our parochial concerns. I think the legislature, when we shine the brightest, are those times. And school issues are usually the time, and I know from the revenue world, we often check our school runs, but I found the times that we've really done our best is when we're able to put those aside. I guess answer the question I would have is as I look at the composition of your committee, I have at least one degree of skepticism, and I would perhaps if it was us having to divide up the ESDs also, that a committee that has such a stake in the outcome would be able to drive as hard and make those difficult decisions, keeping in mind the governor's proposed budget that we're under for the next 2 years and the fiscal long-term structural deficit that we're facing, and really drive those hard decisions. But I guess I would say sell me on the idea that really it is this group did that hard, tough negotiations that you coordinated that really drove down to the smallest consolidation that we could possibly get within our ESDs.
Madam Chair, Senator Decker, first of all, you could get smaller than 10 or 12 if you wanted to. I would still recommend you use this criteria and justify why you're making the decision. At the end, we said, when you get through and work at it, we'd come up with 12 to 15 probably. You got to pay attention. And we started looking at maps after we got this. And geography and distance. By the way, one of the opponents' objections to all this kind of talk is that you will be so far to travel for service and so forth. You won't move all your service providers to send central voice in the middle of one of these ESDs. Your service providers that work directly with kids are still going to have to be located the way they can get to kids in a reasonable manner. Now, that's going to create some additional problems with communication and management of supervision. But those are the kinds of things you have to ask yourself. And I would suggest to you that this group of people are not ESD superintendents first in this discussion. We've had big arguments about we're here to work on the state of Oregon. And I think that I have a role in that because I kind of argue, and I've been through this unification stuff before. Somebody has to pay attention to the entire enterprise. And I believe that they worked very hard at doing that. That's why you didn't get unanimous votes. I mean, this isn't easy for some people.
Thank you.
Committee? Senator Morrison?
Thank you. In looking at the list of names, as Senator Decker did, what I see are a bunch of experts. I see people who are in the field who know from day to day the services that they're providing, and I see an outside group as people who say, show me that what you're doing, or waiting for outside people to say, this is what you ought to do, and we will tell you if it's possible. I'm looking at both sides, but I see these are the experts who have been in the business for a long time and understand the services. And I think it's pretty risky to sit on the outside and start recommending cuts for the sake of cuts without fully understanding what it will do to the services. So I think out of this process, we will probably get some of both and arrive at, I think, an equitable decision. We will make changes. I'm going into this with the idea that there will be some changes made, but it will be made based on the best practices.
Was there a question mark at the end?
I'm not sure.
Do you agree?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Marcet. The only thing I would say is, that's this committee, that's what they were challenged to do. Is what is our best thinking? Again, back to the remark I made earlier, and I preach this everywhere, and I get water thrown on me. I don't think Oregon's future financially is all that positive in terms of what I want to be able to do for kids and for seniors, et cetera. And we have to do a better job, and we have to think system-wide. And I believe that these ladies and gentlemen that did this made a real significant effort to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rose, I'll ask you to step back, and we've got 10 minutes for your four superintendents, so I suspect they're going to be asked to hang around to come back a little bit later in our hearing. So if you could come forward and identify yourselves, and I guess you'll be limited to about 2 minutes each at this point, and we may just save our questions for you later and ask you to stick around. Okay, so just one of you start off.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll probably be the lead speaker, and these guys will be here to answer questions. I'm Dennis Dempsey, the superintendent of the High Desert ESD, and I'm the president-elect of the OAESD.
Okay.
I'm Jim Abbott, superintendent of Northwest Regional ESD. My name is Jonathan Hill. I'm superintendent of Douglas ESD.
Oh, hi. We'll see you on Friday.
Ron Hitchcock, superintendent at Lane ESD.
Okay, great. Mr. Dempsey, do you want to just start then?
Sure, Senator. On behalf of OASD, I should say that these committees are not just superintendents. They also include board members. Our organization is a little different than a lot of other state organizations. We have one half of our organization is made up of all our board members. The other half is made up of the 20 or 19 superintendents. There's a lot more board members than there are superintendents. So in these committees that Ozzie Rose was speaking to and Sager and others, Mr. Sager and Ms. Fleming, it's made up of superintendents and board members. We actually started this discussion last fall and actually came up with the core services back in November. They were actually approved by the executive committee in December. And then that committee asked us now, okay, great, you got these core services. What is the criteria? So we had another committee that I chaired, Mr. Mabbitt chaired the first committee on the criteria. And then we met with the board members and the superintendents, came up with the criteria, presented those to the executive committee, and they approved those. So now our next step is, where do we go from here? And, you know, obviously one of the discussions is, now that we've got the criteria, now we have core services, we're going to go back to our K-12 superintendents and get feedback from them as to what this means to them and what they would like to see. And so that's kind of where OAESD is as an organization right now moving forward. I think as a large group, the majority of us are in favor of reorganizing ESDs to meet the needs of kids now and in the future. And we have to do business differently. ESDs have been around 150 years, and their roles have changed dramatically in 150 years. I know that the Oregon Department of Ed and the governor's office would like to see our role changed. And the key for us, and I've been in education 30 years, and four of my family members are in education, is we have to care about all the kids. When you're a superintendent of a big or a large school district, you're responsible for those children that you're serving there. As an ESD superintendent or as a legislator, you're responsible for all the children. And we have to, when we sat in these committees, we had to start thinking about, how do we make sure all the kids have equitable access to all the services they need, whether it's special ed, whether it's internet connectivity, you go down the list. And that's really our role. And I guess somebody coined the term that we're somewhat middle management, and we are, but we're also there to work with those districts to help them do the best possible job with their children that they have. So that's about all I have to say. I don't know if any of my peers would like to jump in.
Go ahead, Mr. Hill.
The observation I would make, thinking of the comments Senator Deckert made, and I think the significance of what's in front of you is in the section labeled implementation. And when that particular work group, which I sat on, began our task, I observed an out-of-control freight train coming west and coming from the west. And that out-of-control freight train was a local ESD saying, hey, our program is driven by our local districts. They drive who we are. They make us who we are. We respond to the district demand. And the out-of-control freight train coming from the east was the Department of Ed saying, we would like to have each ESD have a uniform plate of services. And those two very conflicting ideas drew my attention. I mean, I realized that was where we were going to hang up. And so what we've proposed to you in this plan is that there will, in fact, be a specific agenda that is driven now under state rule, that will be driven and uniformly applied to all ESDs. But when it gets to the ESD, they sit in the circle with the various district components, and they will individually determine, so how do we respond to that in this district? And the solution that we might reach in Douglas is maybe very different from what they would reach in High Desert or any other ESD, depending on the infrastructure, the demand, the resources that they have available. But it solves the State Department's problem, which currently is that if they drop something in the top of the machine and it goes, you know, the pachinko machine, and it goes all the way through the channels, in 17 ESDs it gets out to the teachers and the districts and the students that it needs to, and in three districts it's lost and they never know where it is because there isn't a uniform system. And this plan creates a uniform system that every region will in fact respond to. So it creates the uniformity that the districts, that the Department of Ed needs, but it maintains an individual response driven ground up so that it works for the peculiarities of that particular that particular region. And I think that's a really nice compromise, and I think it achieves those goals and then puts on the plate those issues the governor's raised about, so where are the efficiencies and how is it you can do things more effectively? It's now on the table, and it's in a guided discussion that's likely to produce some savings. Once you have that in place, and we can talk more about this when you're in Roseburg if you'd like, but when you're in play, get that in place, then my job as a superintendent is to build on that and leverage that base for other things. So, for example, my core funding at the Douglas ESD is $4.5 million out of that core funding. My total budget's $18 million because I've taken that platform and added grants and contracts and enterprises and other activities to enhance what we're doing. Quite honestly, I would argue that good ESD is a profit center for public education, and you want to keep them as healthy as you can. So my concern about the notion of sending dollars to districts and then having to buy into the ESD is you're less likely to have that platform to leverage off of. And that's also the reason that it's critical that every district participate. And you now have this statewide system that applies everywhere. All the districts are inside, and you can build a solid platform which you can then leverage for those additional dollars that are out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. And I really appreciate that explanation. That's one of the better explanations I've received yet about how this plan is to be put together, and I want to tell you that I appreciate that. And I have several questions, and I think the committee does, but, you know, I think this is actually going to work out quite well, because what we'll do now is hear from Senator Ringo and a group of folks he brought forward, and then members of the public who have significant concerns about the operations of ESDs. And you know, as you four sit there, that you have some pretty significant bad PR things to overcome. And Mr. Mabit, you and I talked about that on Thursday in my office, and I'll be addressing those later. But I think it will be good for us to hear from the other folks and then bring you back up at the end to address some of those questions. And I hate to keep you around, but it's kind of the way it works around here. Will that be fine with all four of you?
Chair Walker, I'm afraid that I've got a commitment that I won't be able to stay until later, but I have many friends in the audience who I'm sure will fill me in. And then we look forward to seeing you on Friday, so we'll be ready to deal with any loose ends or issues that erupt between now and then. Marjorie can give us a call, and we can try to make sure get responded to when you're in Roseburg.
I think that's great, and I do want to thank you in advance for your hospitality on Friday, and we look forward to seeing you then.
Great. Thank
all
you.
Right, thank you, gentlemen. If you want to step back then, we will hear from the proponent of Senate Bill 415. And while Senator Ringo is coming forward with whomever he chooses to bring at this time, I'll have Ms. Taylor explain to the members of the committee exactly what Senate Bill 415 does.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 415 directs the State Board of Education to remove large school districts from ESDs. The bill defines those what large school districts are. The bill directs the State Board to merge all remaining areas into no more than 8 ESDs. The bill prescribes redrawing of zones within each ESD and establishes terms of the board of directors. There's also funding formula information in the bill. The bill declares an emergency effective July 1st of 2005. However, the new ESDs would not become operative until July of 2007. This bill currently has a subsequent referral to revenue,
which Senator Deckard happens to chair.
Bills go to revenue.
All bills go to revenue. All right, thank you. Senator Ringo, state your name and
thank
what you're
you
here for. Thank you.
Again, Senator Charlie Ringo, Senator from Beaverton and Northwest Portland. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss this bill. I've talked about it a little bit with each of you individually, but to me, it's a very complicated matter. And I'm not here to say Senate Bill 415 is the perfect product or the end product. And I'm very happy to discuss with you on the committee or some of the folks who came and testified what needs to be done with ESDs. So you can shoot holes at 415. It's not meant to be the perfect product. Again, I do think we can do a lot to bring more efficiencies to the system and get more dollars in the classroom. And that, Jim Sager said that was the goal, and I completely agree with that. how to identify these savings. It isn't easy when you're dealing with big bureaucracies, but I'll lay out a couple items. First of all, we all know of these quote mini scandals that keep coming up of really horrible examples of poor spending. And, you know, I think the problem is it gives people a black eye when really these are the people who testify here are very dedicated educators, and I don't want to demean them in any way. I think that they do want the best for our children. I think that they've devoted their careers to education, and I don't want to demean them in any way. And I really look forward to working with them as this discussion continues over the next few months. But I do think that by making some significant changes, we can, A, stop some of the examples of improper spending, but B, make sure that the dollars really are focused into the classroom. And I want to give you just a story. I had a meeting with my superintendent, ESD superintendent, Jim Mabbitt, who was sitting right up here on December 28th. Representative Mark Hass and I asked him for a meeting. And he came to my law office and was very generous with his time. So he came at I think, 10 o'clock a.m., and also the assistant superintendent for the Northwest ESD came, and their chief budget person came, and their public relations person came, and their lobbyist came. Five people. And I remember after that meeting thinking, you know, the total annual salary present at this meeting must have been $350,000. I don't know. It's a lot of money. And this was at least equivalent to 10 teachers. And when the public asks us, how do we save on administration and get more money into teachers to reduce class size, I look at this meeting and I think this is a classic example. Now, sure, you have to have administrators. Administrators are important. But in this case, these functions that I just described, Beaverton School District has all those identical functions. And all those identical functions are carried out at the Department of Education level. So here we have three layers of administrators carrying out the identical functions. And that's where, when people say, well, Charlie, where are the savings? Examples like that occur over and over and over again. They're difficult to track, and they're difficult. I can't show you a fiscal, but those examples are constantly reoccurring. When I talk about the reforms of ESDs, you'll see on my, I printed four of them, we need a different governance structure so that somebody's in charge, so that these are managed differently. I've talked to Jim Mabbitt about it. I don't think this is a big concern to them. The devil's in the details. I think we can get there. We need to increase accountability. You know, when the Baker Wallawa ESD had this big scandal over the airplane, there was nobody that could even replace the superintendent. The state could withdraw their state contracts and use that as a form of punishing that ESD, but there was no oversight over that superintendent. And I remember Representative Wisnett was in the committee saying, well, I'm from the military. In the military, when somebody screws up, you yank them. You fire them. You get somebody else in there to do the job. We didn't even have the ability to do that in that case. Now, letter C is focus on the mission. One of the problems with ESDs, and frankly one of the reasons why they keep having these problems, is because the mission is so diffuse. They are engaged in entrepreneurial activities. One of the witnesses just said, well, they can bring money in. I strongly disagree with that idea, that somehow government should be engaging in private enterprise with the idea of making money. They're going to lose money 99% of the time. Government's not good at making money. Government needs to provide their core service, and in this case, it's education. So when we talk about reforming ESDs, we need to focus their mission on what they can do to help the kids in the classroom. The last thing, D, essential reform, has to do allow large and medium-sized districts to pull out. This is the only thing my bill addresses. My bill doesn't even address points A through C. I think it needs to be part of the discussion over the next couple of months. When you step back and ask the basic question, why do ESDs exist? That's the place you got to start. A lot of the witnesses you just heard said, we need to consider what we want ESDs to do. That's the wrong question. The question is, why do they exist? The answer is because they are large enough and that they have the economies of scale to provide services that school districts can't provide for themselves. Okay? That's why. Why have a regional entity at all? The answer is because a small district just isn't large enough to come up with their own speech pathologist, for example. Large districts can. So I go to three conclusions, and it's on the top of my second page. ESDs are essential for small districts. I absolutely believe that. If you're in Astoria or Tillamook or Roseburg, Representative Cruz, or someplace like that, small districts don't have the economies of scale. But for Beaverton, for Hillsborough, for Portland, they don't need to be part of ESDs, and that's why they represent this unnecessary layer of overhead. And when you talk to these folks, when you talk to Ozzy in private or a lot of these people in private and say, what do you think? Do big districts really need for their own management to be in an ESD? They'll tell you no. The answer is no. Point C, ESDs are not a good model of government. This is how we're addressing this. And just think about this for a moment from this price of government model we're talking about. But I believe the way that government should function is we as a legislature should figure out what function we want carried out. What do we need performed by the government? Then provide an agency a specific amount of money to carry out that task. Okay? Here's our need. Here's the money to fulfill that need. ESDs are backwards. We give them 5% of our money. We give them $250 million. And then we step back and say, gee, now that they have this pot of money, let's come up with some good things they can do with that money. And they do a lot of good things. I don't want to say they don't do good things. I'm just saying that decision-making model is backwards. Rather than giving them the money and then figuring out their mission, let's first figure out their mission and then decide how much money they need to accomplish that.
Senator Ringo?
Yes.
Is that what you perceive they have done with their document here, created out of their working group?
I think it's a step in the right direction. I think it's pretty sketchy. I think it needs a lot more details, at least if that's the document I've seen.
Okay. Senator Morsett, you have a question?
Yes. Have you had a chance to look at the other document that we don't have that lists all of the services provided? Have you had a chance to look at that? I haven't seen that document.
I have not received anything from the ESD folks recently this subject.
I would like to see, and I think you ought to look at that document and see if the services that they list that are provided are what's drives the amount of money that they have rather than the other way around.
I appreciate that, Senator Morsett. Madam Chair, may I trouble the committee staff for some water, please?
Oh, sure. And Senator Ringo and committee, it's my understanding when this document came over this afternoon, Brett West of the Department of Education said he wanted to work on this a little bit more, so that's why Marjorie did not print it out for us.
Okay.
But I'm welcome to send it. I'm happy to send it down the table, and you can look at it now, and then as soon as it comes out, we'll make sure you get a copy of it. And you will as well.
Senator Morrison, just as a comment, I do think whatever is on that list needs to be tailored with the idea that ESDs are to provide services that the districts can't provide for themselves because they don't have the economies of scale. I think that needs to be the underlying premise of what ESDs are all about.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk.
Sorry, Senator Morrison, an additional question.
Okay, you mentioned the 10 larger districts not needing services that ESD provides because they can provide them for themselves. Now, have you considered what that might do to the smaller districts that are in that ESD grouping?
Let us get there shortly, if we can. Yes, well, I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, thank you.
No, because that is, I think, the key question right there. I think, really, Senator Morsett, that's the nub of it. My bill would pull out all the districts with more than 10,000 students. And if you'll look at the next page, there's a list of those districts. There's 12 districts. So not that many districts, except it's 45% of the students in the state of Oregon. I admit that 10,000 student figure is really arbitrary. You could lower it down to 7,500, 5,000. I'm not really sure what the right number is. We can talk about it. Also, I'm amenable to a plan that says they have the option of pulling out. So if the school district really wants to stay in the ESD, fine. So I'm comfortable with a variety of options here. The dollars would have to flow through to the school districts. Okay, and that's because those districts now would be tasked with what the ESDs are currently helping them with, like special education is probably the big one. Now, the remaining ESDs would be consolidated, and again, this is rather arbitrary. I just said eight. But the point is that if you pull out the large districts, you're going to need to redraw the boundaries so that the remaining school districts are in an ESD that's large enough to be sufficient and have the integrity of serving the students in that ESD. And if you look at the couple pages back, it's labeled Table 3. And it lists regions 1 through 8. If it were redrawn this way, the smallest ESD would have 25,000 students. So easily, the ESDs would be large enough to have the critical mass, have the economies of scale to do what they need to do. Now, Ozzie said everybody's drawing maps, and I agree. I mean, my next page, this is just my map. His map is probably as good as another map, and so I'm certainly not stuck to these boundaries. But really, this is illustrative. And it illustrates that even if the large districts are pulled out, the remaining districts could be part of an ESD that has the capacity to deliver the services that they need. I remember a discussion I had with Ozzie Rose months ago where I said, well, Ozzie, how many students do you need to have in an ESD so that it's large enough to function? So you don't leave them out there so that they're too small to get the job done. And he hemmed and hawed for a while and finally came up with a number, but I remember it was about 10,000 or so. But certainly these districts are large enough so that those ESDs would function just fine.
Yes, Senator Marcel.
Have you considered the distances traveled? I noticed Elaine ESD would, I think, go down to Brookings, for instance.
Well, it's an issue, and I think it's an important issue to consider, whether you've got an ESD headquarters in one city and satellite offices in another city. And frankly, I mean, if you don't want to consolidate, I think that's fine, too, but I don't think you get the savings that you can really achieve. But, I mean, Senator Morris said, I think that's certainly a legitimate concern. If somebody has to drive to a weekly meeting and it's 300 miles, yeah, that's a problem.
And some of them, it's more like 500.
Well, maybe they'll take that airplane.
Excuse me, may I?
Yes, Senator.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking so much of going to meetings. I was thinking of...
Serving the students.
That's right. From that distance. Yeah.
That's right.
But it's now, my understanding, Senator Ringo and Senator Morissette, from the testimony, I believe, from Mr. Sager, I'm not sure who it was, I'll flip through my notes, but it's not, the services will stay there. I think that was Mr. Rose. The services will stay there. It just becomes a management, that was Mr. Rose, it becomes a management and communication issue with the district. So I think it's doable.
I think that's right.
Yeah. All right. Senator Ringo, you want to finish?
Well, thank you. What are the potential savings? It's really hard to pin down, but I'll just give you one thumbnail analysis. Beaverton School Board's gone on record saying they don't use approximately 30% of their share of the budget of the Northwest ESD. There's 10% overhead that's taken right off the top. Then at least in the Northwest ESD, of that 90%, 25% of that is considered, quote, core services. They don't use the core services. Hillsboro folks, same way. They just don't use them. So that represents about 30% of the budget that they're not using, largely. Okay, I suspect most of the larger districts are in the same situation. I haven't checked with all of them, and there is a difference among the ESDs. But if you assume that that's the premise, that they don't use 30%, okay, and this would apply to 45% of the students in our state that are, in my opinion, subject to unnecessary administrative overhead. So we're talking $250 million. 45% of that gets you down to about $120 million. 30% of that gets you down to about $40 million. That's about $40 million of overhead that they just don't need. Now, where's that money going right now? I think part of that money is serving essentially an equalization function. I think part of it probably is. But I think a lot of it is going right down a rat hole. I think a lot of that $40 million is money that is just not used wisely. And this is money that needs to be directed into the classroom. It's a really hard number to come up with. I admit this is conjectural, but certainly the structure is not set up to be efficient.
Senator Ringo?
Yes.
Do you have any of the people testifying today here to talk about what that rat hole would be in the Northwest ESD?
No, I don't think there's any way to know. I really don't. But But let me put a spin on it this way. The Northwest ESD has an $8 million office building. It has office space for nearly 200 people. Okay? These are 200 people that are not in the classroom. It doesn't serve the folks in my community, Beaverton, Hillsboro, to have this $8 million office building there. It really doesn't. Now, yes, I mean, there's a whole staff that operates it. Some of that is necessary. But in the larger scheme, I think if you could sell the building, run it out of Tillamook, or let it get closer to the districts where the districts are smaller. So I think it's hard to calculate it, and I don't even pretend to do that. Frankly, you've seen the budgets. I've looked at their budgets. You flip through them, and they're incomprehensible. All I know is the structure is not set up to create efficiencies, and that I know.
And your superintendent was in my office last week, and I questioned him about their palatial office building and the items that were purchased, extravagant items that were purchased. And he did say that he inherited that as he came in as ESD superintendent, and that those items were sold.
And I don't criticize him one bit.
Right.
I really don't.
It's the structure of the ESD.
It's the structure.
Okay. And hopefully we'll have some time and we can hear from him later. Senator Morse had a question, and Senator Cruz.
What comes across in this report, the amount of federal funds received by the ESDs, and I'm just wondering how that would translate to each and every single school district if they would be able to get the equivalent.
That's a good question, and there are a lot of technical hurdles. I mean, ESDs have bond levies out there, okay? The local districts would have to pick up their share. I mean, they own capital assets. There's a lot of technical issues. That's another good one, and I don't want to lose one federal dollar from flowing into our schools. So I think that's a good question to ask.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was reference made earlier to the fact that we've got triplicate administrative functions at the school district level, at ESD level, and at the state level. And then there was also comment made that the State Department is looking at a regional structure. And so I'm wondering why we are looking at ESDs. Shouldn't we be putting the same microscope on the State Department of Education? Clearly, when I look at administrative functions, the appropriate place is clearly at the school where the work happens. But then we have these other layers. So I'm wondering why just looking at ESDs and not the Department of Ed at the same time?
We should. I don't have that bill written, but
I don't either.
No, it's a good question. I think that let me just give you a couple examples. The Multnomah ESD does bulk purchasing for school districts all over the state, including say Coos Bay. Okay, and they justify it as, well, it's good because it helps us keep our costs down, and Coos Bay likes it because they're receiving lower cost supplies. I don't think it's their business to do that. I really don't. I think the Multnomah ESD should be focused on serving kids within the boundary of their district. And if there's a place in the state for bulk purchasing, let's do it at the state level. Let's do it at DAS, for example. Let's do it somewhere else. But the problem is, when you have this arrangement, there's no accountability for it. I don't know how many people of the Multnomah ESD are working to support this bulk purchasing program. I don't know what their PERS retirement account is going to cost. I don't know any of this. To me, it just doesn't make sense. And that, I think, goes to your question of, can some of these centralized functions be done by the state so you don't have the multiple layer? Probably yes. I just use that as an example. I mean, there's all kinds of examples of ESDs in one part of the state providing service for somewhere else. And I think this gets into, we need to focus the mission.
And I'll get to you in just a second, Senator Morsett. Senator Cruz and Senator Ringo, I can tell you both that our Ways and Means Committee has been in the process of going through the K-12 budget, and the Oregon Department of Education has presented itself as having streamlined and reduced the number of administrators that they previously had. Trust me, we will be asking more questions. Someone already asked why we have a chief of staff when we have all these department heads. So we'll continue to look at that, and I don't think we need a bill to do it, Senator Ringo. Senator Morrison has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My Ways and Means Subcommittee deals with general government, and DAS was there to tell us that, yes, indeed, they do central purchasing for everything.
All I'm telling you is what Multnomah County, Multnomah ESD is.
Maybe or I don't understand that because I don't understand.
I mean, the Multnomah ESD is running a print shop that does jobs for non-education groups, that say non-profits, and they justify that by saying, well, because they pay us and it helps support the print shop. I think that's backwards thinking. I really do. Go ahead.
Well, may I suggest something?
Yeah.
Having been a member of Lane Council of Governments, don't you think that entrepreneurial activities that actually are easy to duplicate for the private sector who use that are good if they do supplement the income of the public sector?
I think the theory is very good, but it's really hard to have accountability over it. Madam Chair, I want to make sure I finish.
Yes, Senator Ringo, I was going to remind you, we're at 4:30, and you have until 5:05 for your folks. So
I will move on through here quickly.
Okay, and colleagues, if we can let him do that, that would be great.
Let's say, for example, and I know more about my ESD, the Northwest ESD. Let's say, for example, that the large districts, Beaverton, Hillsborough, and even maybe Tigard, Tualatin, pulled out. Well, the question is, where would that leave the smaller districts like Tillamook and Victoria? A couple things. First of all, it would be better for the large districts because we would have more control over our dollars. They'd be flowing right into our district. But second of all, the secret is that Tillamook and Astoria, they don't really like being in an ESD where they're overwhelmed by the larger districts. If you had an ESD that was all made up of small to mid-sized districts, that ESD, those services could be better tailored to districts of those size. So they would have more control over their dollars. So essentially, you're creating more local control for the dollars for the big districts and for the small districts. I really think it improves that control for all size districts. Now, this idea of equalization. I've had a lot of people tell me, Charlie, all these the purposes of ESDs, et cetera, really they're about equalization. That's really what they're about, is equalization. And my response is, well, let's be honest about that then and say they're about equalization. But if that's true, what an incredibly inefficient way to accomplish it. I mean, this $8 million office building in Hillsboro, they've got someone down in Salem, they've got them around the state, I think. These headquarter buildings, just to move money from one place to another, and all the overhead, that makes no sense to me. If they're really about equalization, let's do it the old way we've got, which is do the formula. The other thing about equalization, when we do equalization in the formula, and let's use the transportation costs, for example, if some districts have high transportation costs in rural Oregon, at least we've got a very methodical way of calculating how much money they need for their costs. That's been calculated. We know because their school buses have got to go 100 miles that they need a little bit more. Very methodical way of knowing what they need to do to equalize. If ESDs are about equalization, there's been no analysis. There's no logic at all as to how much money is flowing from one part of the state to another. That's got to be part of the equation. So if they're about equalization, I would just ask you to keep that in mind. The issues of accountability, I don't want to beat that too hard. We've heard about these problems. I think that in any large group, you get some poor administrators. I think they're the exception. I think by and large, the administrators in our state do a great job. We do need more oversight than we have right now, and I think we can get there. Again, it's not part of my bill, but I think it's something this legislature needs to do. I kind of want to just address some miscellaneous points. The school administrator, I've talked to a lot of school administrators about this, and I've had a lot of them on the phone say, Charlie, you're right. What you're saying about ESD is right, and I say, could you come and testify in Salem? And they all say, no, I can't do that. That's what they've said. No, I can't do that because, colleagues and responsibilities and this and that. And that is the really hard thing for me. Senator Morissette said, well, all these experts up here, and I do acknowledge their expertise. I guess, I know a pig when I see one, and I can see some of the realities of what's going on with these ESDs, but it's really hard to get the administrators who even acknowledge the truth of what I'm telling you to come to the committee and say that. I do have a couple school board members that are going to be here. the proposal by the ESD and the administrators. I'm fine to talk about that. I want to hear more about it. I do want to draw your attention to the very last page of what I have, and it says Education Service District's annual revenue. And this is annual, not biennial. You know, so biennial you'd punch it up higher, and this number contains some money other than what's coming in from the state school fund. But the point of this chart is that if you were to eliminate the 8 smallest ESDs, just totally eliminate them, that's only $10 million. So let's say, okay, rather than eliminating them, you're consolidating them, and you're saving 30% in overhead. That saves $3 million. I mean, the point of this chart is that consolidating these very small ESDs just doesn't get you that much. Probably should be done, but when you look at the scope of the budget for the ESDs have, it's not the solution that's going to help us with our larger problems. I want to mention one more thing, and then I'll be quiet, and I'll let some of the other folks come up and testify. I talked to Ed Jensen, who's the head of the Wallowa ESD, and he had a very interesting perspective. He said, you know what should be done? He said, you're not going to save that much money by consolidating, but he said, you should take all the 20 ESDs and ensure them a budget of $1 million. Senator Morissette, this is the suggestion of Ed Jensen of the Wallowa ESD. He said, take every ESD, assure them a budget of $1 million. So that's, say, $20 million right there. Then take all the remaining money, the $230 million, and let it flow straight through directly to the districts. Then if they want ESD services, they've got somebody to coordinate with. But they've got more control. They have maximum control over their dollars. That's a lot more aggressive than what I'm proposing, but frankly, I think that has a lot of merit, because I think when you get the money down to the lowest common denominator in terms of decision-making, it's going to be done better. I appreciate your listening to my long discussion of this, and I hope that the school administrators are amenable to working with me in something that I think makes sense for the kids all over Oregon. Because really that's the goal. My goal is not just to hoard money in one part or another, but I think we do have a responsibility to take care of students in all over the state. I have asked three people to come and testify. One of them is Joe Rodriguez, who's the former superintendent of the Hillsborough School District. Another is a fellow named John Peterson, who's on the Hillsborough School District Board, and I guess I'd like to ask them to come forward. The person who's on the Beaverton School Board, Mike Leopold, was not able to make it today. Then the other person that would come up after those two is a woman named Kate Diamond, who used to be employed by the ESD. She had some potential legal issues with them that I don't really want to be the subject mm-hmm. of this. But the real question is her views from the inside of the ESD. So I really appreciate your time and listening to me, and I look forward to working with you on this issue further.
Okay, thank you, Senator. And I would note that the relating clause on your bill is relating to education service districts, so we can use this as a framework. Thank you. And so I would like to call up in Senator Ringo's, with his advice here, John Peterson and Joe Rodriguez. If you two gentlemen will come up and testify, and then after you're done, we'll hear from Ms. Diamond. And we have 35 minutes, so gentlemen, please be cognizant of your time. And if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is John Peterson. I am a member of the Hillsborough School Board. I appear here today, however, not as a representative of my school board, because I don't think the membership of the board even knows that I'm here, but rather I come as a concerned and I think relatively well-informed citizen who wanted to express my concerns over the what I see as the inequities in the current funding of ESDs vis-a-vis the larger school districts. And I've given you some material there, and I'm going to go very rapidly through it. But basically, I want to hit some main points here. As you know, we are within the Northwest Regional Education Service District, and it's my opinion that is just far too expensive by way of its administration and its operations. Their annual report, a summary is attached, that was an excerpt from their annual report provided to the Hillsborough School Board, is attached to my materials. And you'll see there that they have 10% of their general fund revenue is allocated to operations. With following the receipt of their annual report, we also received at our last board meeting their resolution plan for the services they would be providing for this current school year. And if I look at the cost of administration from that compared with the administrative cost of ESD operations for last year out of their annual report, what I find is an increase of over $600,000 in operation expenses, which to me represents, if you do the arithmetic, about a 20% increase overall in administrative costs. And perhaps Mr. Mabbitt, when he can address the reason for that, I don't know exactly why that would be. I can tell you as well that based upon the statistics that they provide us, that the Hillsborough students, we represent approximately, in the last year's report anyway, we represented 19.9, almost 20% of the students serviced by the our ESD, and yet if you look at the service credits that are allocated to us, there were only about $3.5 million, which was representative of about 10.74%. So we have 20% of the student service, and we receive in service credits about 10.7%. Now, of course, there is core services also that we're entitled to in addition to our service credits, but I will tell you that the Hillsborough School District doesn't utilize those core services to any great extent as compared to the smaller districts. Now, there is a subsidy. Obviously, there's a subsidy for the smaller school districts. We all understand that, and there are some inequities that the legislature, I think, in funding needs to balance. I'm here simply to whine and complain as a board member and as a parent of students in my district that this is a heck of a big subsidy, folks. It's a big subsidy. And if you take the number of students that we have in our school district, and you divide that into the total budget to determine, you know, what share of that gross general fund budget should we have? Well, it looks to me like the subsidy that we are making here, the Hillsborough School District, say nothing of Beaverton, which is also making a large subsidy as well, it's enormous. It's in the millions of dollars. And we, this year, of course, we're back in our budgetary process again, as are all school districts around the state, and all the school boards are out there wrenching their hands, trying to figure out how in the world are we going to maintain services to our students. And I look at the inefficiencies of this additional layer of administration, and I look at the size of that subsidy, and it seems to me that this is very, very unfair to my students, to my kids in my district, and it would go a long ways if we had that money in our own house, because we don't need a lot of those services. We have excellent special education programs. We have speech pathologists on staff, and if we receive that money, we could get that money into the classroom in direct services without the loss of all the administrative costs, because we're set up to do it. And we don't need to allocate anywhere near that much greater percentage to administration. So that's what the numbers show. And if you look at just the last two pages of the materials, again, those are excerpts right out of the annual report of the Northwest Regional ESD. And you can see the problem, and in graphic terms, the numbers. And on the second page, I've done a little bit of the arithmetic for you that you can derive from that. So I'm here not necessarily with a solution, but sure to whine and cry and complain about the problem and help define what the problem is, because there it is for us in very, very real terms. And so as a parent and as a voter in our district, I have great concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I have a question for you. Do you have any control over how the Northwest ESD spends their money? I think your answer is going to be no.
Well, we have some control in that we can receive up to about 50% of our service credits in cash and demand that, and we do take that. I can tell you this, one of the things that I hear that I don't want to leave today without making this point as well, that everybody that I talk to
feels similarly to me, at least the folks in the Hillsborough District, parents and citizens that I visit with. But the big worry and concern is everybody says the same thing. Yeah, but if you opt out of the ESD, is the legislature going to give you the money back? Because we do get some of our service credits in cash. Now, it may not be a very efficient way of getting that, but we at least get the cash and for that portion that we take, and we do use some of the core services, and we do get some service credits, not very efficiently, but at least we get it. So if you opt out...
What are you left with?
What are you left with? We got to have... The object here is to get the money back in the district where we can spend it far more efficiently. That's my opinion, anyway.
Thank you. Senator Cruz?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. You got to bear with me on some of these things. I'm just a simple country boy. But
You would never fool me with that statement, but
no,
please go
crying.
Ahead.
You talk about you're large enough, and I understand you're large enough to have basically the ability to have the special ed folks that you need, and so you're not utilizing those services from the ESD, but you're short in other areas. I'm wondering why you didn't turn that around and say we can get these services from the ESD and then we can take the money we're taking out of our budget to buy other shortfalls. I mean, why doesn't that seem like, I mean, why did you go one way and not the other?
Because we can better and more efficiently spend the money in our own district by taking it than giving them the direction and having them supply the service to us. We're always going to take the money and administer it and spend it far better. We're a far more efficient operation, I believe, than the Northwest Regional Education Service District.
May I follow up?
Please.
Okay. You said you can take half of that money in cash.
We're right now, it's my understanding from our administration that we take approximately, Mr. Rodriguez is our past administrator, he could probably tell you directly what we did last year because he was in charge of it, but
well,
it's my understanding we take about half of our service credits in cash right now.
Well, I guess the question is, if you're leaving stuff on the table, why wouldn't you adjust and take the services and use your money on other shortfalls?
Perhaps, if I might, to help clarify that. Remember that.
Identify yourself, sir.
Okay, I'm Joe Rodriguez. I'm the retired superintendent from Hillsborough as of June.
And congratulations.
Well, thanks. And I I don't know exactly why I'm here, except that Mr. Peterson and I don't always agree on things, but we happen to agree very strongly on this particular issue. Again, remember that 90% of the resources coming to the ESD end up in the resolution plan. And in the Northwest region, 75% of that is used as service credits that we as a school district get. The agreement with the school districts and with the ESD is that half of that, 50%, we can take as direct cash. The other 50% we use, all of it, to buy services, special ed in particular. That's the primary one. The other 25% of the ESD resources out of the 90% are core services. In our district, Beaverton, and most large school districts in the state do not use that at all. We operate our own systems to be able to deliver those and have no need for their technology services, their curriculum services, and we don't use them.
And if I might interrupt, Senator Cruz, Mr. Rodriguez, could you define what a core service is? You kind of hinted at it.
The
curriculum?
Yes, Madam Chair. The agreement in the region is that the core services include things like technology and then the administrative components of special ed that are run regionally by the ESD and curriculum services.
Thank you. And then were you done, Senator?
Well, I guess I was, but since you brought that up, Madam Chair, and you gave me the chance, I'll just take one more small shot. So out of that 25% core services that you don't use, could one assume that the ESD, that money is used to fund core services in other districts, the smaller districts that don't have the ability to cover those core services themselves?
That is the intent of the resolution plan agreement.
But, yeah, I understand that. But in your opinion, is that what happens to the money?
I think you get varying responses from different superintendents on the degree to which that happens.
I understand the theory. I'm just trying to see if it's practice. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Rodriguez, did you want to address the committee?
Thank you. I do, and I appreciate it, Madam Chair and senators in the committee. I think it's important to remember that the governor in his campaign said that there were $80 million statewide in excessive administrative costs. In December of 2002, the Secretary of State issued a report that Oregon's K-12 schools spent over $160 million more in support services when compared to other states. Specifically, there were three areas that were identified. Number one, Oregon has historically spent slightly less per student on instruction than the national average. However, Oregon is above the national average in support services expenditures. Number two, Oregon schools and school districts are smaller than the national average. Number three, the size of the school district appeared to heavily influence district spending. I'm personally of the mind that we have too many organizational bureaucracies within the state education system. There are states that operate county school districts or multi-county school districts rather than so many smaller entities. I don't know what the exact savings are for the plan and the bill that's before you, but I do know that the Secretary of State has offered to do an audit of school districts and the state educational system. And it seems to me that even though there's criticism of spending money, that maybe money that's well spent to be able to identify clearly what those efficiencies truly are and how those savings occur. There is little doubt in my mind that as Ozzie Rowe said, that the savings by merging or consolidating or bringing things together are not only efficiencies of scale, but also efficiencies because you're reducing personnel. And I think that's a very valid issue within the context of how we deliver services in the state. I've been very upfront with fellow superintendents in our region. They all know my view on the issue, and that is that I believe that we should have county school districts in the state, and we should not have ESDs, because those services could be delivered through county school districts. However, the bill at hand at least serves as a direction that we need to consider heading. The issue of the lack of resources to larger school districts is really a key here. The estimates on the resolution plan in the Northwest region for next school year alone represents approximately $1.9 million to the Hillsborough School District. In other words, if the Hillsborough School District received all of the current ADMW going to the region that are represented by our kids, that would be another $1.9 million. For Beaverton, it would be $3.5 million. Those are really significant dollars as it relates to operating expenses in a local school district. We went through some very difficult times in Hillsborough over the past 3 years, and we ended up last year with a very sufficient ending fund balance that I had hoped would be able to carry us through this year, where state funding was again reduced, and over the next biennium. It's going to be very tight for the district. I think Mr. Peterson would agree that they're having to take a look at how they have to make some reductions right now, either increase class size or make program decisions. This additional revenue for the school district is very critical, and it seems to me that having larger school districts in the state have the opportunity to have all of the resources that they're generating come back to the school district, the money will be well spent, and it will be well spent because it won't add new programs, it'll be able to maintain current programs that we value in our schools. The issue of the smaller school districts really is an interesting one. I'm convinced that the consolidation to 8 ESDs will really focus some things for those smaller districts in the ESDs. Services that are currently being provided can continue to be provided. The focus, I think it was really well put by Senator Ringo, the focus for those school districts then, they don't have the 300 or the 900-pound gorillas of larger school districts to deal with in trying to reach conclusions on how funds should be spent regionally. They'll be able to focus specifically on their needs. I spent time in my retirement doing volunteer work in some of the coastal school districts on trying to provide them any technical assistance that they need at no cost. I have found in doing that what they're asking for are delivery systems that are located in their county, something that they can do consortiums on to be able to deliver services and have costs for those programs be focused there in that community, so that the cost of hiring a teacher isn't Washington County's cost or Beaverton and Hillsborough's cost, but Tillamook or Seaside or Astoria. There certainly is a layering of bureaucracy. I know that the people at the Northwest Regional ESD do wonderful work. They're great folks. I've worked with them over the years. They're sort of an addendum to what we do on a regular basis. They're an appendage that we don't use. We really don't need, as a large school district, either Beaverton or Hillsborough. However, services for smaller school districts are very, very important. On the issue, I know Senator Ringo did a very good job of explaining some issues that he sees with the region. I can just tell you the one story, and Mr. Mabbitt was not involved in this, but it's just not the larger building that's there. Just before I became the superintendent in Hillsborough, we found out that the ESD had done a certificate of participation to remodel the building and the facility there, the new building. And it was really interesting that not one of the superintendents, who were current superintendents then, knew a thing about it. It was something that they just did. And, of course, the superintendents, when we went through the 1999 change in ESDs, we were all very concerned. Wait a minute. Are we now losing resources that should be directed to kids because we're paying for the remodel and expansion of a facility? But those are the real key kinds of questions that need to be answered when you look at how the funds are being utilized. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. That's an interesting little story you told at the end, because I had a hard time understanding last session when I was dealing with the issue of wired glass in our schools. We have thousands of square feet of that stuff, and it's extremely dangerous. And I was successful at the national level, which filters down to the state level, of changing the building code so all new school buildings will no longer have wired glass in them in locations where students can impact it. But you should have heard the school administrators object to that bill, because it would cost them money to protect the lives of the children, when I talked about going in and retrofitting the schools. And even when I withdrew that portion of the bill, and where retrofitting was no longer an issue, they still stood up and objected at national conferences and elsewhere. And I found it truly appalling. So let me ask you this question. Would you believe that protecting administrative jobs is more important than getting more money into the classroom?
No, I think one of the dilemmas that we have is we have organizations in the state who do very good work, but they're self-serving. They are self-perpetuating, and I worry a lot about the decisions that are made. I think the conversation that you had earlier, you have a committee that's putting forth a recommendation on ESDs. I haven't seen it, but it's all being presented by the ESDs. And I would question that that's the best way to look at and analyze what changes need to occur. The critics of education right now are basically saying, you all get a lot of money and you don't spend it wisely, so why don't you do something about that? And most of us, myself included, say, well, wait, we do really great things with kids and really good work, but the reality of the situation is that we are unwilling at times to take a good look at ourselves and have someone from the outside take a look at ourselves. And that's why I think the Secretary of State's offer, although it costs money, is probably money well spent if it's in fact going to identify those things that we should be doing differently, which is what I think the critics of education are saying. We're giving you a lot of money. How can you do some things differently? While radical, reducing the number of school districts in this state and working on how then things are delivered, would it in fact result in efficiencies?
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I'd like to hear from Ms. Diamond now, and I appreciate both of you coming.
Thank you.
Ms. Diamond, could you come forward, please? And we have about 10 minutes for your testimony. I hope that's enough time for you. Pardon?
I believe it will be.
All right. Thank you. If you want to state your name and whom you represent, or whom you used to represent, or whom you used to be employed by, that'd be great.
My name is Kate Diamond. I'm a professional project manager in the construction world. I have been for 28 years in nationally and international construction. I was hired back in February of 2004 as an energy project manager with Willamette ESD, and this is to manage currently contracted projects under Senate Bill 1149. Under that after 2 months of kind of orientation, I noticed that there were some problems that didn't seem to make sense, and that was there was lack of documentation. There were missed financial opportunities for several districts, unexplained expenditures, and excessive administration fees not usually charged in the private, in the public sector or the private sector. One of the more glaring issues was that the ESD system prevented a lot of the money from Senate Bill 1149 to get to the schools, because there was a 13% amount of the 1149 money to the Department of Energy through ESD that was never line item. Contracts did not protect the schools. The ESD chose a modified industry contract over the standard Department of Administrative Services contract. Budget overran in several different districts because of faulty bids. Central Lynn was 40K over, Cresswell 59K over, and EPA paperwork was not filed, which could have resulted, if not rectified, in excessive fees for the school district itself. The contract did not provide for recourse for the school district. For example, if the contract between the school district and a contractor that the ESD administered, if there was any dispute, the contract would only protect the ESD and not the dispute between the school and the contractor. There were discrepancies. I have one example of the contracts didn't provide for the recourse for the school was that Central Lynn, for example, time cards that were asked for by the ESD from the contractor show payroll workers that were not on the BOLI, the Board of Labor and Industry. Reports showed salaries charged to the district. For example, that amount of money that was within that contract, the district had to pay for. Time cards are now missing. I have no idea where those time cards are. Lebanon and Sweet Home districts, there were carried out projects with the ESD assurances that the business energy tax credits would be given to them. But, of course, they were never paid due to the ineligibility of projects that were assured were eligible. So if a project was suggested for an energy project and the project then was sent to the Department of Energy, the Department of Energy then would turn down that particular project. They would lose the business tax energy tax credits. But the administration of the ESD told them that they were assured that that would be forthcoming. The basic conclusion to this is that I have sisters that are in special education here in Oregon. They teach. And I know how desperate these services that the ESD provides for special ed, for example, are. I know how critical they are to my sisters. But as Senator Ringo mentioned, there's this hole that money falls down, and it doesn't seem to be accountability as to where it's going or why it's going there. And the other part of this is that the schools are not reaping the benefits of this program. The ESD program creates a system which takes advantage of the school districts, and I think unwittingly. There has been some illegal bid processes for projects. There have been hiring contractors that on no bids at all, just picking somebody and going with them. There are deals cut without the district's knowledge, and because of the way it's contracted, the district is liable for that deal. If the district does not know about the deal, they are still liable for the deal. And so this is a severe lack of accountability, and it hurts the schools. And the schools have little or no recourse because they are under contract to the ESD. My opponents could say a lot of things, but the bottom line is when you see schools out in Wasco County where the kids have to go into a sunken gym because it's too hot to work. So they have to lie down in the school gym just to stay cool to do their work. It makes it pretty tough. And you see parents who really don't have a lot of money. They go and they start to paint the sides of the buildings and take off the old paint. And everybody tries to participate. But those dollars that we have should be going to those schools. And most of them are rural. And most of them don't have the sort of things that the big schools have. And the schools up in Portland are marvelous. They're big and they're pretty and they have all kinds of things, but these rural schools have nothing. They have nothing but little memories for little kids. So I would beg you to look seriously at some of the expenditure and some of the programs that are being under the umbrella of services. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Diamond. And colleagues, she has provided her testimony that you can read 3 pages in depth. Do any of you have any questions before we move on? All right. I want to thank you very much for your testimony and service. All right, that brings us to the public testimony period, and I have 3 people here who've traveled more than 100 miles, who seem to be from a long, long ways away, and I'm going to have them all three come up at once. Judy May, Laura Pryor, and Rob Myers, if you could all three come forward. And I don't care who starts, but whoever starts off, would you state your name and your affiliation, please?
My name is Judy May. I'm the superintendent of Lake ESD. Prior to that time, I was the interim superintendent for Spray School District for 7 years. Prior to that time, I was a superintendent of Sister School District. Prior to that time, director of personnel for the Ben Lapine School District, and then also an administrator in that district and teacher. The reason I bring out this litany is not to impress you. It's just the fact that I have been in a lot of different districts, large size comparatively speaking. Ben Lapine would be one of the districts that you would pull out if you approved Ringo's proposition. Spray would not, obviously. And now at Lakeview for the year and a half, I have seen a completely different kind of way of life. I'd like to bring your perspectives away from the misdealings of 2 or 3 ESDs or individuals with the ESDs to a small district, Lake County. We have a budget of about $1.5 million. I'm the superintendent half-time, and we had a person retire this last year who was also the curriculum person. Rather than hiring another person, I assume those responsibilities. Do I work more than half-time? Probably. Do I choose to do so? Yes. But with that $1.5 million budget, we wanted as much money as we could to go out to our 5 districts. The largest district is Lakeview. It has about 780 students. The smallest district is Plush. It has 10 students. There are 5 of us. We meet in Paisley once a month to be able to discuss our resolution services. We have a strategic plan that was provided to us by Jonathan Hill when he was the Lake ESD superintendent. We are in the process of revising that. The reason why I bring that up is that we do have 4 core services, and we do provide those services to the school districts. But the issue that needs to be examined, certainly you can combine a lot of the small school districts. The issue that needs to be advanced at this particular point in time is that if you do, you need to look at the travel of the individual. I have one school psychologist who travels 4 hours a day, leaving at 7 in the morning to go to North Lake. She spends the whole day there and has IEP meetings after school, gets home at 8:30 or 9. Now, that's part of a day, and she does get some release time on Friday. But when you take a look at the weather and that type of thing, she does that every week. If we are combined with another school district, or another ESD district, excuse me, such as High Desert, they are 2.5 hours away from North Lake. they are 3 hours away from Lakeview, and that means going 70, 80 miles an hour at times, which I have been known to do. So the issue, though, in terms of providing services, and you didn't hear me say that, please.
No, I was just going to say
right, that
we've got an 18
full disclosure here. The issue that I'm trying to bring out here is that when you take a look, we've been focusing on all of the issues of the large school districts, and I don't know whether I fully agree with pulling them out, because they do provide dollars that help the small districts leverage funds for the services that they need. But the small school districts have issues of size, small size, and travel of their personnel. We have 13 FTE, that's 22 people. We do not own our own, we do own our own building, but it's a very modest building. It was just recently repainted by some employees who felt it would be a good deed to be able to do those kinds of things. So we really pay attention to business. We don't have a lobbyist. We really don't have time for those kinds of things. PR, we've never heard of those kinds of things out where I am, and no assistant superintendent. We have no entrepreneurial activities. At one time, they tried to have a print shop, but it didn't work because we had someone in the town who was a private employer who really would prefer that we not compete with them. And frankly, I was very relieved because I didn't want to run a print shop. We really try to do everything that we can for the five school districts. And we provide services not only in special ed, but technology. Now, finally, all of our school districts have T1 lines instead of 56 K lines. We were able to provide technology service. Our business manager has been able to provide the actual South Coast accounting, so we use the same kind of accounting. We are looking at the possibility of when people retire, of our being able to take over some of the business services. So we are attempting in our own way to try to do the best that we can with the dollars that we have. So by focusing on the foibles and the things that three different districts did, that I don't know what happened with the chair, or not the chair, excuse me, with the board or the people there that allowed that to happen. I don't feel that that paint should be spread on the rest. And necessarily do I feel that these districts should be held accountable because they have new administration, that we're not responsible for those kinds of issues. So I think we're looking at kind of two different things in a sense. How best can we provide services to our students? I feel that we do an excellent job in Lake ESD. We even provide a Spanish teacher who's willing to go from Paisley to Lakeview, three periods in Paisley, three periods in Lakeview. That's what they wanted, and that's what the rest of the people concurred with. So we're providing them with needs along with the core services that they need. So the issue to me is, how best can we provide services for students? So please don't put the small school districts in this whole mix with the issues that are happening in some complex areas that should have been taken care of. Just as a school district, we know that there have been problems within school districts, but we don't ask them to consolidate. And so they really, I think we all need to be more accountable, but I really feel that a number of us are. And don't paint us with the same brush.
Thank you. Ms. May, could I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. Would you consider the Baker Union ESD a small district or a large one?
I would consider it a medium-sized one, but they were able to expand a tremendous amount.
Okay. Thank you. Judge Pryor, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Pryor, and I'm the county judge from Gillum County, Oregon. And I want to put in perspective for you small. I represent people that live in the smallest ESD district, North Central Education Service District. That consists of Sherman, Gillum, and Wheeler counties. That's about 5,000 square miles and about 4,900 people. There are 860 children in our ESD district. If we are consolidated, it'll break up the three smallest counties. The three smallest counties are contiguous, and we're right in the middle of the state on the north border on the Columbia River. Gillum and Sherman are right on the river, and Wheeler is directly south of Gillum. And we're the three smallest counties by population in the state. The next largest county is to the east of us, and it's, I believe, it's 12,000 people in Morrow County. if RESD is consolidated with Unitil Amoro, we'll be taking an ESD that represents 860 kids and adding it to an ESD that has between 12 and 13,000 students. Let me talk briefly about distance. From Pendleton, which is the seat of the ESD in Unitil Amoro, it's 150 miles to Amoro, the county seat of Sherman County. It's 110 miles from Pendleton to the county seat of my county, Condon. If you take Fossil and put them with Crook County, it's 75 miles one way for the people that live in Fossil. So you have distance, you have the differences in taking very small ESD and kids and school districts and hooking them onto a very big ESD. There's about 84,000 people in Morrow and Umatilla counties together. Most of those kids, the 12,000 to 13,000 kids, live within about 35 miles of Pendleton. And then you have all of us in the frontier rural area of our three counties that live to the west of that. So you've got distance as an issue. You've got great distances in being able to provide communication and get people there back and forth physically, plus the same weather issues. You go through canyons that are 1,000 feet deep in snow and ice during the winter. You also have a capacity issue. If you take RESD and put it with Umatilla Morrow, you're going to have to leave some kind of capacity somehow, and you couldn't leave much less than what we've already got there to be able to provide the service. So I don't know what we gain by destroying this ESD. At one time, we had three ESDs. Each county had their own. We consolidated. And we had a choice. We could have consolidated in the manner you're thinking about doing now, or even something different. Sherman County could have gone with Wasco. Gillen could have gone with Morrow. And Wheeler could have gone with Crook. The reason we didn't was after much soul searching and lots of meetings on part of the people in the three counties, we felt we were more alike. We had more similarities and we could build on those rather than go the other way and be the tail on the dog. And we have 100 years of experience with being merged with larger jurisdictions and how well that works or doesn't work. So we chose to do what we've done now. The number of jobs that this ESD provides can't be underestimated, even though it's such a small number that it would probably surprise everybody. But one job in Umatilla County equals 44 jobs in Gillen County. That's the economic difference and the impact of the payroll. Now, if we just took this and said, I'm here as a county commissioner because I'm concerned about losing my ESD, that'd be true. But the unintended consequences of a series of events, losing our ESD at the same time I will be here before, I imagine, Senator Decker, your committee, talking about the proposal by the Department of Revenue, which can close our assisted living facility. So piece by piece, the unintended consequences cut away at the skeleton of what we've got left for a society out there. So in some ways, I'm glad I'm here today to talk to you about this because it's Rural Oregon Day. And hopefully, maybe people are thinking a little bit more today about that than maybe you would be on another day. So I'm not an ESD employee. I don't even pretend that I could teach school. But I do know my community. I've been 18 years a county judge in a frontier rural community. And I do know how that society functions. And we function on bare minimum. The ESD technology department is the only way that my county government gets our computers taken care of. And that's the way it is for Sherman, Gillum, and Wheeler, because we can't get people that'll come out there and do it. We don't have contractors and consultants and trained people that are knocking down our doors competing with each other to get out there and give us service. So the ESD, working with the counties, has created tools that we would not ordinarily have. We have contracts between the three counties, Gillum, Sherman, and Wheeler, and the North Central ESD for telecommunications and services, because we found if we went together, if we connected with our schools, county government and the schools working together would be able to create technology and telecommunications in the schools. And we couldn't do it alone. So we saved money for 10 years to work together to do this. So those contracts exist now in our small communities. So I guess what I'm asking you to do is to please think about what we always say in this building. We don't all wear a size 7 shoe. And please think carefully about the very smallest, those that have the least, those of your children that you have to think about as being state representatives. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Pryor. And Mr. Myers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Rob Myers. I live in Condon. Two or three things I'd like to say. Most of my comments I changed as I was sitting here for the last 2.5 hours, so I'll change it a little bit. But I was struck by something. I went to school in Condon. I grew up there, and an English teacher there told me one time one of the things I've never forgotten is that the generalizations are dangerous, and they truly are. And at that time I knew quite a bit, a lot more than I do now, and I'm sure that's why she told me that. And their thought that came to my mind was guilt by association. And I want to take just a second and reiterate what Judge Pryor and what Superintendent May have said with regard to not painting us with the same brush. We're not afraid of having a bright light shone on the operations of the ESDs in Frontier Rural Area, not one single bit. I can tell you that that the ESDs in small rural areas, particularly Frontier rural ESDs, are an integral part of the community, particularly the economic community, and of course, obviously, in addition to the educational community, but they play a part in the community itself. North Central ESD, for instance, North Central ESD also owns a building. Now, we cut a deal on it. We were able to pay $7,900,000 less than the other building that's been talked about today. So we got in that deal right, and we formed a partnership with the county, with the city, with the Economic Development Corporation, and with law enforcement, 911 emergency services people. That building today pays its own way. The North Central Education Service District lives in that building for free. The regional public safety answering point is there. The offices are rented out, and that was the purpose to begin with. Primary purpose was to provide a place for the ESD to be, and in partnerships with the community, to remodel or renovate a historic building on Main Street in Condon that would be a direct contribution to the local economy, and that's the way it's proven to be. So that's the synergy that can be created in very, very small remote rural communities, in conjunction with the ESD school districts. I think it's also important to make sure that we understand the lack of administrative waste in remote rural school districts and remote rural ESDs. There's one administrator for North Central ESD and Grant County. Primarily spends his time at North Central ESD. Grant County's contracted with him, so we've got two ESDs right there with one administrator. There's one deputy clerk at North Central ESD and one in Grant County. There's no administrative waste there. Each of our six school districts in Gillum, Sherman, and Wheeler County have one administrator. That administrator is the superintendent, the high school principal, the grade school principal, several of them coach, some of them drive bus. There's one deputy clerk in each school district. That deputy clerk handles all the receivables, all the payables, all the bookkeeping. So basically two people in each one of these school districts. Now, you have to be careful in terms of how those costs are characterized, because too often we characterize those costs and we do cost-benefit ratios on the basis of per capita or per ADM. And then work where we are. Obviously, you can't deliver the same service for the same amount of money to people spread over 30,000 square miles as you can people spread in Washington County. I mean, for instance, what we have to fight are things that actually look like statistics, but they're really anomalies. Let's say the Mitchell School Superintendent, for instance, makes $75,000 a year, and there are 75 kids in the Mitchell School District. Well, that's $1,000 per ADM. I mean, it's atrocious. The Multnomah County School Superintendent makes $175,000 a year, and there are 55,000 kids in Portland Public Schools. That's $3 per ADM. What do those mean? Do they mean we should pay the Mitchell School Superintendent $225 a year, or the Portland Public School Superintendent $55 million? So you have to be careful. You have to be careful where the statistics lead, where they lead you, and to what conclusions you reach because of per capita, per ADM type of calculations. They don't work. And I think there are some other things that can be brought to play in this. I want to just give you a few quick statistics about the differences between delivering services in an urban area and a rural area. And I also want to qualify and preface my statements by saying, you know, I don't see this isn't a rural-urban, this isn't a rural versus urban problem. What it is in principle is a prime example of the danger we run when we craft solutions for urban problems and apply them in rural settings. Doesn't work. There are unintended consequences that, quite frankly, are not only disproportionately negative, but they are catastrophic. Particularly when we're talking about the economic situations that we're talking about now. Judge Pryor mentioned Gill and Freeman Weir counties. There's no doctor and no dentist living in Gill and Freeman Weir counties. 4,000 square miles, no doctor, no dentist. Now, that's, we choose to live there. That's a decision that we make. But it gives you a sense of the remoteness of what we're talking about. The five smallest ESDs in Oregon, which are North Central, Grant, Harney, Lake, and Wallowa, serve students spread across 30,000 square miles. Now, 30,000 square miles is equal to all the land area west of the Cascades. There are 17,000 more students K-12 in the Beaverton Hillsboro School District than there are in the 30,000 square miles of the seven frontier rural counties. There are 11,000 more people living in Washington County than east of the Cascade Mountains. So there's an entirely different delivery dynamic that exists. And it's really important to understand, I think, the differentiation between economies of scale, which works when you have a set cost spread among larger numbers of people, and actually the cost per delivery unit goes down, as opposed to what we consider to be our economies of scale, which is an aggregated service model, where a education service district provides one teacher or one counselor to serve 3 to 4 or 5 or 6 school districts. The point is that if North Central ESD were to go away, and this would be much the same thing with any of the other frontier rural districts, the districts that are left, the school districts themselves, would have to recreate a service delivery model identical to the ESD. So what have we gained? We haven't gained much of anything. And I think that Senator Ringo's acknowledgement of the fact that maybe consolidation of rural ESDs might not create a situation where we realize the outcome we're looking for, either with regard to services to students or to saving money, it's something we need to really consider, because it may not be. If you took each of these North Central ESD, for instance, operates on $1 million funding floor. Well, if you took away that $1 million, basically would reduce the amount of services to those kids by $1 million. If you don't give $1 million back to Unitore Morrow ESD, then the way my mind works, our kids have lost $1 million worth of services. The average metro high school in the Portland area offers 200 courses. The average frontier rural high school offers 40. We've been on 4-day weeks for anywhere from 5 to 10 years. I mean, we found the bottom. If you're looking for basic service level, we can show it to you. And I think that each student in this state, and by extension, his or her taxpaying parents or guardians, are righteously entitled to basic service with regard to education. And what that is, we might define differently. But I can tell you we're awful close. We're real close to that. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be discussing this again. But it's really an opportunity. We've done this for four straight sessions now. And the existence of Frontier Rural ESD has been questioned. It's just like clockwork. And all of those Frontier Rural ESDs are still here. And they're still here because they do what they do better than anybody else. So we really appreciate the opportunity to prove it yet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. You know, I think the Constitution would agree with you that each child is entitled to a basic education. But what that is a very good question. So, yeah. Senator Morissette, you have a question.
Well, I'm just kind of curious where the Ione School District is in your rural area. Which county?
Ione falls into Umatilla Moro ESD.
Oh.
That's in Moro County.
And they disaggregated themselves from a larger district.
They did.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Deckard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will tell you, I really appreciate your panel. It was very enlightening to learn more in detail because I too was at least a little bit troubled. It's always good to hear anecdotal evidence, and there was enough anecdotal there that you start to smell a little smoke in terms of, and I guess that's the question that I have, is I don't profess no expertise in this arena, but I do see a difference between the medium, large-scale ESDs and those smaller ones. But then I hear Plush School District with 12 students, and Superintendent, you can immediately guess what goes through my mind is there's got to be, where I think of in those medium and larger mm-hmm. ESDs, we have to think of some level of, there has to be some level that we can get to there in terms of duplicative jobs. And that's where my mind is where do you get at those? Because that my sense is that they're there, and although all we're hearing is anecdotes of this person does this person does that, and you can't craft a bill around the story. But I think the transfer of that, so in one respect you have that issue to wrestle with, I think this committee and Senate Revenue Committee also does. The other issue is around these, and you heard testimony earlier around county school districts, and I realize the pain that involves, but I do think in the fiscal environment that we're in, and not just the short term, but the long term fiscal environment that we're probably hitched to here, I would only challenge and welcome your comments that we're going to have to think, my feeling is, differently, and I think that's good testimony. It made me think differently. If don't think of these frontier rural districts the same as you would think of even a Central Lynn or certainly a Washington County one, but I guess I would challenge on the school district size, realizing that the superintendent drives the bus, making that realization. I guess that's the challenge, and if you have any thoughts, the panel, on how we might put together this legislation that would, I guess, recognize and ask the tough questions, because we're going to have to ask them, I think, on this side of the Cascades for RESDs and other. But if y'all have thoughts on how we would, how you might, what role y'all might be able to play in terms of the tough questions that you could ask in terms of the size of school districts and maybe county school districts and using mm-hmm. that, the ESDs, to help those.
Lake ESD hired a governance study to be done several years ago in which they talked to all the board chair and the other members of the five school districts in terms of what they would like to see. And one issue that was talked about was a countywide school district. There were some feelings about it, dependent upon how the different districts felt about each other. And so we haven't gone too far with it. I'll tell you what we have done is that we are looking at the possibility of merging RESD and sharing an administrator with one of the school districts to be able to do that. I need to tell you that Plush is K-3. The services they receive are about $20,000 total from our budget, but they do receive administrative services from the ESD. Every school district is supposed to have some kind of administrator. We provide that. Mm-hmm. We do for Adel. They have 22 students, 4 through 8. And so that's where we provide the governance for them at that particular point in time. But we've had discussions as to what direction we do need to go. But what we really, the bottom line is, regardless of the organizational direction that we go, we want the dollars to remain with that organization so they can go to those students in the Lake area that deserve to have the same kind of services as everyone else does. But we're willing to look at different things and have done some reorganization as North Central ESD has done.
Mm-hmm. All right. I hope that answered your question, Senator Deckert. I think we've got a long way to go here, and I appreciate your comment, Mr. Myers, that you've been here 4 sessions and you're doing it again. But, you know, we are the state school board, if you want to call us that, because we do fund the greater part of education. It's really important for us to look at where all the dollars are being spent and how best to utilize those dollars. We wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't.
Well, Madam Chair, I certainly appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I, you have a difficult task, and frankly, we feel that it's our job to be helpful rather than a hindrance to you. And to the extent that we can do that, we'd sure be glad to.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, we have 28 minutes left, so I'm going to give 14 minutes apiece to the next group. We have 6 people left to testify, the 3 superintendents who were here earlier, and then I have 3 others on the agenda. So we'll take Amy Grant, Roger Williams, and Craig Rossler, I believe is the name. If you'll all 3 come forward, I don't know if you're all on the same issue or not. Doesn't matter. Because we'll just take you all as a group. You have 14 minutes between you, and then we'll do clean up with our ESD folks who are sitting back there patiently. And why don't we just start from left to right?
Okay.
State your name and your affiliation, please.
My name is Craig Rossler. I'm superintendent of Silver Falls School District, which is located about 10 miles east of here, Silverton, Oregon. And I'm not with the 2 people next to me here.
Okay.
And I'm going to be testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 415, and in particular to a portion of it. And that portion that I'm speaking in opposition to is the part that would remove the school districts that have 10,000 or more students from local ESDs. And my opposition is in large part based on my experience that the portion of the state school fund that goes to ESDs for resolution services serves to unite school districts by bringing all districts within an ESD region together. And I can give you an example with the Willamette ESD. Once each month, the school district administrators, these are the superintendents from Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties, join together to share information, resolve conflicts, and to coordinate services and activities. Some examples include coordinated school calendars, services to special education students and regional programs, staff development programs, responses to No Child Left Behind Act, discussions regarding Oregon Student Assessment System and school improvement requirements. I believe the shared resolution dollars and an ESD that belongs to and represents all of our local school districts in a particular region is a glue that binds school districts together in ways that I believe benefits all districts, and that's large, medium, and small districts. I'm afraid without the common factor of shared resolution dollars that the incentive for local districts to meet would be lost, and with it the sense that no matter what size the school district, we have a shared and common purpose. I do believe that there are options to Senate Bill 415 that could be considered, such as redesigning the ESD governance structure. For example, would local citizens and K-12 school districts be better served if ESD boards were comprised of board members from local K-12 districts? Or if ESD budget committees were made up of superintendents from K-12 school districts? Even without changes in governance structure, Oregon law that requires ESD resolution services to be approved by at least 2/3 of the local boards representing a majority of the students in a service region ensures that the interests of both the small and large school districts are protected. Given the ongoing shortfall of funding in Oregon's K-12 school districts, the increasing number of complex and federal mandates that are coming our direction, a shifting in the demographics within many of our local school districts, it seems to me to be a time to support and, whenever possible, to increase the cooperation among school districts. I fear that the portion of Senate Bill 415 that removes Oregon's largest school districts from the ESD system will serve to weaken rather than strengthen the ties that bind Oregon school districts together in a spirit of cooperation and shared purpose. So I guess for the 5% of the K-12 funding that goes to ESDs, I think there are a lot of benefits that come from it. I believe if you pull those large districts out of that discussion, those monthly meetings, that there's something going to be lost in that process. So I would urge you to rethink at least that portion of Senate Bill 415 and to consider some changes possible in the government structure.
Thank you, Mr. Rossler. I really appreciate those comments about the governance structure. That is really the first time I've heard those points raised, and I think they're very valid. And I think this committee will take a look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
And, you know, I went to school at Butte Creek Elementary School in the eighth grade. Is that in your school?
That's in our district, yes.
Hey, yeah. Go Bobcats.
You bet. They're still there. In fact, I'm going to be sitting in for the principal out there on Thursday, so all day. Yeah.
Well, I came from the big city, and so I was sort of an anomaly there, and started the yearbook and the rally squad.
Okay.
And also shortened the length of the skirts the girls were wearing.
Right. Well, see, it's important to kind of meld those small and large districts together. And again, I'm really fearful if we pull those large districts out. I mean, we learn a lot from Salem, and I think Salem School District learns a lot from us. There's important information that's shared there. There are resources that they can bring to the table. And if there weren't those resolution dollars that pulled us together, I don't believe we would meet on a regular basis. I think it would be very difficult.
Well, I those comments are well taken, and I know that I first got the opportunity to see the opera by being an eighth grade student at Butte Creek Elementary, and our music teacher brought us into Salem. And I've loved the opera ever since.
That's
so
great.
Thank you very much. Okay, the two of you are next. Now, I bet you anything you're going to have something to say about all those phone messages I've gotten into my office today about homeschools.
Well,
so why didn't one of you start off and tell me who you are?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Amy Grant, and I'm a homeschooling parent, and I'm on the board of the Oregon Home Education Network. My concern with this bill is just in Section 24, and it's because it puts the fox in charge of the hen house. Up until 1985, oversight of home educating families was done at the school district level, and it created many, many problems. School districts have a vested economic interest in getting privately educated children back into the public schools. That's where their dollars come from. I'm very concerned that any oversight of home educating families not be done by public school administrators. It's currently done at the ESD level. So one of my primary concerns here is that the people that would then be overseeing in the large school districts, the people that would be overseeing the homeschoolers have very little experience with home education laws and rules and have very little incentive to promote home education. So I think it's putting the wrong people in charge of home education. But I think Senator Ringo brought up a very good point, which is let's question some basic assumptions. And I'd like to question why public education dollars are being used to oversee private education. And I think there are two major concerns with that. One is constitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that it is a parent's fundamental right to control the education of their child. And any laws that restrict that right to protect a state's interest must be crafted as narrowly as possible to meet the state's interest with as little infringement on the parent's rights as possible. The state of Oregon does not require oversight of unregistered private schools
that don't take public funding. It does not require them to register their students with the state. It does not require them to subject the students to standardized testing. So the state of Oregon has already shown that its interests in children's welfare can be met without registration and testing for children in private education. There's a due process question that says, why are children in some forms of private education subject to this oversight, and why are the others not? That's an inconsistent application of the law. The second point is the issue that has been raised most often to justify this intrusive state oversight is children falling through the cracks. And I'd like to just point out some statistics. Two-thirds of the reports of child abuse and child neglect in the state of Oregon as of the latest report, which was 2002, two-thirds of these reports were below the age that the state starts to oversee home education. Two-thirds of the reports happened to children below the age of seven. Also, 83% of the reports of child abuse and child neglect came from sources other than educators. Came from the community, came from doctors, came from law enforcement, came from all of these other sources that have nothing to do with the education system. And all of those sources, all of that safety net is still there, even without state oversight. So as you are looking at the roles of ESDs, I would like you to consider that one role that they don't need is to oversee home education. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Grant. Let's hear from Mr. Williams.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm Roger Williams. I'm on the board of the Oregon Christian Home Education Network Association. And there are, as you see, we do have some proposed language here. Basically, it deletes the requirement for testing and notification of home educators in line with our belief that that's not productive and costs the state money. I have two, and I'll make this fairly brief. I have two things that I'd like to talk about. One is, how does regulation hurt home educators? You know, we get that question, what's the big deal for you guys? Why are you making such a fuss? And I may get to that if I have time. But the other one is the issue of dropouts. And we heard in the interim education committee this summer, we heard concerns that students are dropping out from the public school and claiming that they're homeschoolers, and that makes it impossible for truant officers to do their job. And if you look on the last page on the handout here, this is from the Department of Education's school dropout report, the latest one. They should be coming out with another one here in a month, but this is the latest one. And in the class of 2003, you'll notice that there were 8,200 dropouts. Now, that doesn't include people in jail. That's a separate line item down here, legally withdrawn. But then the homeschool, the people who left and said they were going to homeschool, is only 300, 8,200 to 300. And I guess what I'm asking for is a sense of proportion here. One other thing on the back here. These are apparently the acceptable excuses for dropping out of school. Substance abuse, student felt peer pressure, did not achieve, so forth and so on. And there appears to be an unacceptable excuse, and these are all excuses, by the way, an unacceptable excuse that I'm going to homeschool. And I would ask, how many of the 8,200 are actually prosecuted? I'm not saying this in the sense of they get away with it, why can't we? These are truants, not homeschoolers. Truants should face consequences no matter what their excuse. But I'm asking, why is there such a crusade at the expense of legitimate homeschoolers to sift through 300 students trying to identify truants when there are 8,200 known truants to deal with? Truants evidently do not need a silver bullet in the form of I'm homeschooling. they have this entire list of apparently acceptable excuses to choose from. It does not make sense to burden home educators trying to catch the 1% while letting the 99% go free.
Mr. Williams, you have about 1 minute, sir.
Thank you. I'll be very brief here. How does regulation hurt home educators? Primarily, it forces us to misdirect our efforts. Teaching to the test, high stakes test. The middle article in here tells the story of my son, and he was at the 15th percentile, kind of the flunk out point, for a couple of years, and we poured a lot of effort into short term getting him over the hump when we should have been putting that effort into his long range educational growth. And that's one way that this actually hurts us.
Thank you, sir. And I would note that we all have been given your written testimony and have it available. Do any of you have any questions? Great. Thank you, all three of you, for coming. We really appreciate it and appreciate that you stayed long enough to have your voices heard. So we have 14 minutes as scheduled. Could I have our three ESD superintendents come forward, Jim Mabbitt, Dennis Dempsey, and Ron Hitchcock? And, gentlemen, you've heard some of the comments. I'll just let you have a few moments to say what you have on your mind, and I've got a few questions, and some of my colleagues might. But we will end promptly at 6 o'clock and just pick these questions up at another time if you need to.
Thank you, Senator. Jim Abbott, Superintendent, Northwest Regional ESD. I want to just make some quick points. Superintendent Rossler covered some of the points I wanted to make, so I'll just second many of the points he made, and that is the partnerships between school districts within an ESD region shouldn't be underestimated. I've had over 25 years in the state of Oregon as an educator, and 10 of those I served as a superintendent of small school districts in the state. And so I think I understand how a small school district works, and I don't think that in terms of ethics or honesty, we have any difference between anybody within small districts or large districts in the state. I know certainly not myself. One of the first things I did when I came in and started this past July 1 was to tell our board that I wanted to take a look at our entire agency and see where efficiencies could be found. And I think that's important. We're in the process of doing that. I think that every agency, regardless of the size, ought to go through that exercise frequently. And I know that it's happened where I've been before, and it's happening where I am now. With all due respect to Superintendent Rodriguez, who spoke about things in our organization that have happened in the past, those are some of the things that we're making corrections on, and I hope that we're getting credit, and some of that evidence is here, because we spent 2 days last fall working with our 20 superintendents in our region to take a look at what would be the best program for our region, and 20 out of 20 of the superintendents approved the program that all of us came up with. Now we're in the process by statute of going through and having our local school boards take a look at that program, evaluate that, and decide whether it's the program that will work for their district and for the region. We have had 18 districts make that decision so far, and 18 of those districts have all approved. So we have two districts remaining. One of those districts that approved was the Hillsborough School District, where I happened to be at their meeting just a couple weeks ago, had a great opportunity to interact with their board regarding our services, and told them that night that I am not wedded to how our plan is set up. We can change it every single year based on what school districts would like to have happen, and that's what it's all about in an ESD. And regardless of where you are in the state of Oregon, the school district should be driving the bus in terms of how those services look and how they'll operate within particular regions. Just using the Hillsborough School District as an example, I wanted to give you just an idea. The amount that would be generated from their district is about $5.2 million. They receive in service credits and cash, cash from the core portion that you've heard mentioned earlier, $4.3 million. So there's about $900,000 remaining as a difference, but it's important to note that that doesn't include any core services that they do use. It's been interesting to find out who really knows what core services are utilized within a school district, and the folks who know that are the staff that are involved within a school district. And at that particular Hillsborough board meeting, the superintendent was handed a long list by one of his administrators stating the number of core services that Hillsborough takes part in, and Jeremy Lyon was kind enough to mention a sample of those services that they do participate in. So it's important that you get that entire picture. I guess another point I want to make to you is, I believe, a gentleman earlier mentioned, let's shine the light on ESDs, and I welcome that as well. I've been using the word transparency in our region. I want to be as transparent as we possibly can be. And in fact, what I've mentioned to our school districts is that at the end of a year, any of those service credits that they haven't utilized that they signed up for, or any of the money that's left within core services, and for that matter, money that's happens to not have been spent within operations, we ought to look at refunding that money to school districts. And in fact, the first move that I made when I came onto the job this past fall was to do exactly that, refund dollars to school district superintendents, to school districts and the kids in those districts, because that money belonged to them. And so this ought to be a partnership. It oughtn't to be an ESD, looking to see how an ESD can toot their own horn. That's not what an ESD is for. An ESD is to serve the kids within a school district. That's why I decided to attempt to become an ESD superintendent now, as opposed to another time in my career. Now, because I think ESDs are going to be more important than ever in making sure that we have an efficient system, K through 12, that ESDs ought to change. There needs to be changes made. I'm an avid, strong advocate for the plan that's been put together by ESD board members and ESD superintendents. The final point I want to make is that I agree with Senator Ringo that there ought to be a mission stated first, and that's what we've attempted to do. And Senator Walker, you asked that question. I believe the answer is yes. We have attempted to go ahead and put that mission together so that everyone can understand what our mission is as a standardized program statewide. However, keeping in mind individuality and local control is equally as important, and that both of those need to stand together. I should mention to you that there are 42 states in the country that have their throughout the country, they're called ESAs, and everyone calls them something different, but educational service agencies. Within those 42, and it's growing, by the way, there's others that are forming them now, but within that 42, the governance structures are all over the map, and I would encourage you to really take a look at that. I don't think there's any right governance model, but the question is, what will work best in Oregon? And I'd be the last one to sit here and tell you that I think the model that we have today is the right one we should stick with. I think we should take a look at that governance model, and I would be the first one to say I would love to be able to provide you with information from the nation about that and help to take a look at that question, because I think it's a question that's legitimate and ought to be answered for Oregon. Just finally, I guess I want to say that there does need to be change. There's no question. That's why I came into this arena. There needs to be change. I think the change we need to be careful about it. I agree with the broad brush concept that we just don't want to do that. And we need to look at the whole enterprise statewide of the K through 12 system, and not just K through 12, pre-K 16. What does that look like, and what role does ESDs have to play? And I hope to be a part of that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mabbitt, could you tell me if any charges have been filed against your predecessors who lived extravagant lifestyles while they were in their positions?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. And let me say to the committee that we had a discussion on Thursday in my office, and I expressed some concern about the size of their building, their ESD building, and the opulence that it was decorated in. And Mr. Mabbitt explained to me that they sold much of the extravagant things that were in there. And perhaps could you tell us what process you used to sell the goods and how it was accounted for?
Absolutely. First of all, I came to our board early on when I arrived and stated quite strongly that I believe that's what needed to happen. We had some of our programs out there that needed some decent kind of furniture, and they're, quite frankly, in that building there's some things that I don't believe belong in a public building. That's just my opinion. So what we did is we went to the board, and the board passed a resolution that would give us permission to sell off those things that we had listed as extravagant items that were in our building. We then advertised far and wide to sell those, and we have still not sold all of those. We are attempting now to sell some of them through the state pool. But I'll tell you, we were able to sell privately to a private company one large table that we had within our building that needed to go and has been sold. And there's a few other things that have been sold as well through that same process, but we haven't been able to sell all the things I would like to sell, but we believe we'll be successful now in going through that the state pool process.
Thank you. Mr. Hitchcock, I want to give you an opportunity to speak. I have some other questions, but if we don't get to them, I can do them in Douglas County. So would you like to take the last 2 minutes?
Please. Thank you, Chair Walker and committee. I will be your briefest presenter. Three quick points. One of them, I hope what's not lost in all of this discussion, is that equitable access to an educational program by every student in the county is typically on the opposite end of the spectrum when you talk about the function of equitable distribution of dollars by ADM, and you can make your own distinctions there. Second point references Senator Cruz's earlier question about duplication of services. In at least the one ESD that I'm most familiar with, we have $10 million, or in excess of $10 million, that we circulate within Lane County to contract for services with the University of Oregon, with Lane Community College, with the Lane Council of Governments, with 4J School District, where capacity exists at a level that's appropriate and expertise exists that's greater than we can develop on our own. We seek to fund those so that we think we're doing a very good job there at reducing that duplication of services, not building another silo alongside those. And the third one is a bit of a swing at Senator Deckert's question about somebody make a case for me about the fee-for-service model. In a conversation, two independent conversations this morning with the two superintendents from our largest districts in Springfield and Eugene, I posited that question for them. What would you do, or would you like to opt out and take your cash with you? The answer in both cases was no. And I'm not speaking for them. Please follow up and talk to them in person. But the main thing was they said, we wouldn't want to be a part of any consolidation or downsizing of our ESD where we left, because it would be detrimental to students in small school districts. And beyond that, they said, frankly, if you gave us the money that we had coming to us on an ADM basis, we would not be able to provide the supervision, the identification, the training, the solicitation, and the retention of the quality of staff that you have, nor would we be able to, once that construct was gone, be able to go find replacements for that, let alone the fact that from our nearly $40 million budget this year, only about $14 million of it comes from state and local funds. The other of it comes from grants, consortium grants from federal and state dollars, and $0 of that come from entrepreneurial services. That buzzword you heard from that come outside of Lane County. Everything that we do is generated to build the infrastructure within Lane County.
Thank you, Mr. Hitchcock. And Mr. Dempsey, I'm going to ask you to answer a couple of questions for me in writing, because we're out of time today. What I need to know, and Senator Deckard has a question, I need to know what is the practice of ESDs to give their superintendents credit cards, MasterCards, Visa cards. What is the practice of, what are the standard perks that are given among the ESDs? Or are they given a car allowance? When they're done with their car, do they get to buy it at below market value, which is what has occurred in one of the districts? Do you hire outside of family members? For instance, it's been alleged that there's one district that hires a number of family members, extended family members, to perform services. So what are the rules around that? And, you know, certainly legislators, we hire our own family members, too. And that's, you know, that I'm not against that. It's just that I want to know what the practice is. The other one is that there are many grants given to districts, federal and state grants, and that people write those grants. And when you don't get them, do you then lay off administrators because you don't have the money then to service those grants? And finally, I had... I wanted to know a little bit more about the printing plant that Multnomah County ESD operates, and how does that educate kids in our state, and why are they doing that? Why are they in that business? And really, can you give me a picture of what the salary is across the ESD superintendent timeline? I mean, what is the salary of all your ESD superintendents? Matrix. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. So those are the things that were coming out of my head at this moment. Senator Deckert, did you have some quick things?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just given the time constraints, since we're at time, if I could ask just a yes, no, and I know it's an unfair question, but given your limited time where you're at in the Northwest Regional, could the Tri-County area have just one ESD that would serve in your limited time experience there that would serve that region rather than the diffuse structure we have?
I've been spending my time evaluating my own organization. That's a difficult question to answer. I will tell you, with just the pure number of students I assume you're referring to Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas counties, just the pure number of students, I think, would be difficult to continue the kind of level of services and the personalized service that we have in all three of those agencies now. But I haven't evaluated that at all. I don't think I can answer that.
Thank you. Senator Morissette, you had a quick question?
Well, we haven't talked about your governance, your board members who run the place. I mean, you guys don't run it. They do. And you get all the hits. I'm assuming that they keep, you know, these are elected citizens in our areas who run your ESDs. So tell me in writing about your board members, governance of an ESD.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I hate to rush you, but I've asked my members to stay late. And I appreciate the support staff in this building that has stayed late for us tonight. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 4.